the Scotchcast for the week of November the 14th, 2014. My name is Conrad Thurbleton Kirby, and joining me today is Vinayak, a.k.a. Self-Confessing.
Hello!
How you been?
I'm good. I've been doing much, but I'm having a good time.
You've been busy with schoolwork, so I've heard.
Yeah, really busy with schoolwork. We'll see how we go.
Curious how second guest, Matt, or second host, Matt Shinboy, has been.
Oh, also schoolwork.
Yeah.
I know that feel.
Yeah, we tried doing something last week, but couldn't get the schedules lined up. I was, ran a little bit late, and you were doing some schoolwork.
Yep.
Apologies to folks for not getting these on a weekly basis. I'm sure it is Edmund, a.k.a. Nubarama's fault.
Yep. What? No, I had school. I have 30 pages of essays and two midterms.
Hold on. What's your major? Then I'll determine if you have schoolwork to do.
Public administration.
You have
major.
Nothing to do.
Political science. 30 pages.
You have no schoolwork.
And a midterm. God damn it. 30 pages. Fuck that.
I have to build a quadcopter from scratch and get it to fly via GPS points.
That sounds like fun.
Okay. I kind of want to learn. Okay. Can you talk about some of that? Because that sounds kind of cool.
No, because we haven't gotten anywhere because it's hard. Actually, that's not true.
What do you mean by quadcopter from scratch? Like, you're not a kid. Like, you mean like literally cutting the blades yourselves?
Like, we're the third group to do this. This is my senior design project. And we had, it's basically just a carbon fiber frame with motors on each end, which we didn't have to build, but we had to rewire the whole thing.
Okay, that doesn't sound
so. We had to rewire all the motors and move. We had to get a different board for it, and we have to code all of our different algorithms for auto balancing and all of that.
Ooh, that sounds difficult. Auto balancing sounds hard. Do you guys know how? Like, do you have an error engineer in the group, or are you just?
No,
like,
we are all computer engineering because that's all.
Oh,
it is,
I see.
It's all EE and CPE stuff. Right. Like, so it's like the building's done.
So you're just gonna be jumping up numbers and stuff until they balance. Is that?
Yeah, because like we're having trouble with some of the hardware left over from the previous group isn't working. We're up to ordering new parts, and it's a lot of waiting for parts because you kind of need them to get this
welcome
damn
to
thing
prototype design. Yeah, that's prototype design right there. Unless you have like a bank of parts, you just half is just fucking waiting, for shit to get there, and then figuring out that shit doesn't go together, and then ordering new parts.
Yes. Like our remote wasn't working, so we had to order a new board for that, and now that's working. But now we thought the GPS cable was bad, so we ordered a new cable. But turns out the GPS itself is bad.
Exactly. And then you have to order a new GPS, and then the GPS to get there. Then you have to figure out how to work with the new one. This is the same model as the other one, which generally isn't.
Yep. So we have input. I'm sure this is all very interesting. But we have now within our flight managing software, like input from the controller. That's always good. We didn't have that at the beginning. So in theory, if we get all the hardware working, we can control it.
Nice. That works.
And once the GPS gets going,
it stops it from you guys letting it crash if it's not working.
Yeah.
Which is
great. Just we can theoretically, once we get the GPS, we can plug it in and be like, okay, you're currently at point A, plug in coordinates for point B, go.
Mm-hmm.
It'll go.
Yeah. So like on. Yeah, no, I don't know. Like it's depends on who you're working with, but it could be fun if you're with a group.
Yeah, I mean everyone in the group gets along. So
nice. Awesome. Very cool. Like I what little like robotics stuff I've done has been like a couple years ago, but I did mess around with like the Lego Mindstorms and taught kids how to, you know, get into programming with that, and that was cool. And have you heard of the I think it's like the FIRST or the LEAP thing? It's like high schoolers doing like, you know, autonomous robot challenges, and it's like partially funded by NASA.
I have heard of this. Yes,
that's I did a little bit of that.
Thing is, like, this should have been mostly just coding, but because the previous group were kind of assholes and took some hardware with them and left some stuff that wasn't working, we're kind of having to scramble a bit. But
nice. Well, good luck to you. I'd love to hear how that goes. For today, if I'm going to get this, you know, podcast rolling, we'll be talking about video games and movies and music and whatnot, I think.
Sure.
Yay.
Yeah,
sure. About everything.
Yeah.
And some news topics and all that. I guess let's start off with Nubarama.
Okay.
What have you been playing?
I've been playing video games. I'm going to try to remember what I've been playing. Give me a second.
If only there was a handy spreadsheet. That
yeah,
had
all right, I wrote it. Okay. I bought Dragon Age Inquisition, and I think it's so far been a really fantastic game. It's a fantastic experience. And
Why do you still pre-order games?
Well, I pre-purchased this on Mexican Origin, and I'm assuming
it's now at the point
level.
once impressions are out there, I think you can get a pass or pre-order and just you can.
Well,
pre-order
I bought it after impressions were out. But
A couple of things. First off, you're a horrible opportunist of a person to take advantage of people who, like you know, not U.S. or Canadian countries who are given discounts on stuff because they have a lower standard of living.
Well, maybe they should fucking make some money, you know? So, Well, no, the point is, like, if I have access to it, I'm going to save money.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care. I honestly don't care.
It's a hot topic.
I don't care if I drive up the price.
Other question I had, or the actual question. Yes. I know with the original Dragon Age, and I'm sure with, like, Mass Effect and whatnot, other BioWare games.
Mm-hmm.
That they have released like the character editor beforehand, either as like pre-order bonus or other stuff. Have you been messing around with that?
They don't have a character editor. No.
At
least I wasn't able to find it. Maybe I should look harder on Origin. But they do have a really cool thing. Is you can't transfer over save files, obviously, because it's a completely different engine. The save system is completely different. But what you can do is if you buy the game on the website, there's essentially a really cool – like the Mass Effect did this with the PS3 version or the PS4 version of the game. That essentially lets you play through the story through like a comic book-esque sort of thing.
Yeah, are you talking about Keep?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Keep. Essentially, you
What's
can make
this?
Decisions. Dragon Age Keep is essentially a method for you to make decisions that you made in Dragon Age 1 and 2 that will affect the world in your new game.
I didn't do that.
What you do is you log in with your Origin account, and it automatically pulls stuff from your previous games. Like, you don't need I said this on Mumble before. I'm like, this is not the right word, but you don't need your physical save file. No. You just sort of need to have like the same EA account that you played the other games on, and it will pull decisions in, and then you can export that to Inquisition,
that.
Or you can change things.
Yeah. If you don't have those save files, you can just do like a really cool short.
I was doing that earlier today.
It was really fun.
I was like, you know what? I'm going to just make it so I recruited all – because some of the default world states are like, oh, you didn't recruit this person or that person. Yeah. I pretty much just went in and like recruited everyone because I didn't play Dragon Age 2 and didn't play most of the first one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you also get like a brief summary of the game, which is nice on its own.
Oh, good, because I didn't play Dragon Age 2.
That's really cool. So I've been enjoying Dragon Age Inquisition a lot, and I'm excited to play more of it. But next
like,
up
– one of the things I am – really excited people are doing these days is like not quite like a text-based adventure sort of thing to speed through like endless minute adjustments of like in this case a story or like you know it's you know character stats or something like that
like the entire point is like if
doesn't
you want
explain a lot though
people, Oh, it does explain a lot, but I mean, like, if you want a general idea of what the story is and you haven't played any of the games before, it's definitely a nice thing to have.
Yeah, but, like, a lot of the character-specific ones, like, this person is either alive, they left, or they're dead at this place. And it's like, you don't know who that character is, what the significance is of where they died and all that.
But I'm sure, like, for someone, like, for Shinboy, if you want to go down the road of doing those minute adjustments... You like that option is already there. Like he's going through. Like,
the worst case scenario is like, if you don't know who this character is, you can just look it up. Like it's not like you know something crazy.
The nice thing is it gives you those options, which I really like. Next up is I've been playing. I guess I'll go through. I played Star Wars: The Old Republic. That's a thing. That's a video game. The new expansion.
That's a video game we've talked about several times. Yeah, that is a video game.
I played War Thunder. I played War Thunder for 30 minutes. It has tanks now and planes, so you could do tanks and planes. You can get tanks on top of planes and then planes inside tanks. and then you Sub Rosa. Sub Rosa, have you guys seen stuff on Sub Rosa?
Rosa, what is Sub Rosa?
Sub Rosa is essentially, it's now a demo. It's going to be available on Steam in 2015. It's an indie game. Essentially, you are split into, it's a multiplayer game. Currently, it's free. You can actually, it's Google Sub Rosa. It's crypticc.com. There's a demo out. You can play online. Essentially, what it is, it's sort of like the game is split into three teams. Each person each team represents a corporation or like a corporate body with its own interests. Essentially, it's a game where you have the option to, you know, trade discs or trade suitcases with each member of the other team. And one of the teams of the three has a mission to ruin the entire exchange. So it's sort of this interesting, dilemma of, do I trade this peacefully or can I not trust these people, just shoot them in the face and run with the money and then get cock blocked by this third group trying to look for the same thing. So it's like a very interesting three-way dynamic. Right. It's great if you can play it in-house. That's what we've been doing. But it's lots of fun. It's free for now. And the game's coming out in 2015. It's very blocky. It's alpha as fuck. This game looks like a very free game. It looks very free. It's Minecraft divided by 100,000. It's a fantastic, the gameplay, the mechanics are fantastic. It's very interesting to have something like that. Cool. Next up is
local, but like, is the online, like, is the
the weird thing about online is this is like a minor problem. The netcode is fine. It runs smoothly because it's so simple. I imagine that it's not that hard. But at the same time, one problem I have online is people are really stupid. And it's a game where you have to have three teams for it to really work. But people just like to stack on the team with the most people. And that just ruins the online experience. So if you're listening, just don't do that. That's a dick move. The next thing is the Forest co-op. I think I talked about the Forest once, but essentially
the Forest, but yeah. The co-op is something
so
new.
The co-op is something that's been released. It's still alpha 0.09, so it's very, very far from release, but they implemented the co-op mode because there's been like a huge groundswell being like, oh, please get the co-op so we can play the game. So they added co-op. There were a bunch of game breaking bugs. They fixed like the biggest bugs. But so me and my friend tried the co-op mode out. Essentially, for those who don't know, the Forest is sort of like a survival game on an island, except the island is filled with these mutants. And essentially, the game is apparently supposed to make you question, like, you are on this island. Are you really the bad guy here? Because you're going around on this island with these native mutants, killing them.
Yeah, it's sort of like the it's the open world survival genre. Right. But it's a horror spin on it.
Also question, like, are you the good guy or the bad guy? And the interesting thing about the co-op is it makes the game a lot easier because there's two people, and essentially you can build things at double the speed and you can fight at double the damage and you have double the health and there's no real penalty for dying other than losing your stuff. And essentially what ends up happening is that we totally fulfilled the game's idea of like questioning whether you're the good guy or the bad guy, because what ended up happening is combat's a lot easier. And what they added is you can, when you kill the mutants, you can take their teeth, add a little bit of tree sap, and make your weapons do more damage. So what we were doing, we were raiding these settlements and patrols for mutants, killing them, murdering them for their teeth, so we can build better weapons to murder them. I found that pretty hilarious. But yeah, it's very interesting. But I think the problem is it's very alpha. I honestly wouldn't recommend buying it now, because you may burn out, because there's not a lot of content in the game and a lot of it is just simply broken.
Right.
That's just a good general warning for like a lot of early access games.
A lot of early access games, yes. Unless there's
many,
like,
how many player co-op is it?
It's two player co-op.
Two player max, okay.
There are still like a lot of game breaking bugs. Like my friend had a bug where the sound for his entire computer would cut out whenever he went inside a cave. So I don't know where that's coming from, but yeah, there are a few problems with the game. But other than that, I mean, it's something to look out for. Definitely in the long run, this game is very compelling for just, you know, it's a fresh new look into sort of like the survival genre, I would argue. And game wise, that's it. I saw the Book of Mormon. That was really cool. It's nice. About Mormons. Yeah.
I haven't heard of that.
I've only seen maybe two or three musicals, but this is by far huge jump. Trey Parker and Matt Stone. Yeah. The South Park creators. And it's sort of like, it definitely has a little bit of the toilet humor, but like the majority of the people in the audience were like middle-aged people, but they loved it. It was standing ovation, and it was like the 20th show of the tour in Toronto. And
so what is
it?
So essentially,
if you had to elevator pitch it, tell me what it is. Like,
Essentially, it's the story of two young Mormon missionaries, because essentially Mormons at a certain age, I think 18 or 19, are sent out to do missionary work across the world for 2 years. And these two Mormon missionaries are sent out to Uganda, a horrible village in Uganda where there's an African warlord who circumcises women and, you know, kills people at free will. And it's sort of them coming into conflict with their religious beliefs and the realities on the ground in horrible, horrible Sudan. And in that sense, it's a fantastic. It's not just humorous in the sense that, you know, it's a cynical view at religion or anything, but at the same time, it somehow merges that, you know, the humor, the sharp wit, with very heartwarming music. And it's actually a very sweet musical. I really
enjoy it. Sounds like a really interesting
incredibly popular.
Yeah, it's
I'm surprised you haven't heard of it.
Yeah. No, well, he is in Australia. That's up far.
That's true. You're not really. You're not in the real world.
Yeah,
that's true.
Because before I was explaining how to get tickets, because like he's joking with Thurb, like, how quickly could you get to Utah? Because I guess the tour is going there. And I was like, well, I can be at the theater on Broadway in like 45 minutes, but I'd have to wait about a year for a ticket.
Yeah, it's very. And this is about, I think, 3 years in since first premiered on Broadway. It's very popular. And I think it's just like a fantastic experience. And I recommend, if anyone, check out the tour dates, because it's on tour across Canada and the U.S. Tickets weren't that expensive, and it was definitely worth it. I would go again if I had the chance. Nice. I spent $85 on merch. That's how much I enjoyed the show.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And that's it, I think.
Very cool. Like jumping back on the forest thing, and just like going around to everyone, like, what is, like, have any of you guys gone into early access? I've delved a fair bit, and like, you know, we'll talk a little later on about Massive Chalice, and I've been playing DayZ.
I remain firmly against early access.
I played a lot of games on
that,
early
like access. That being like firmly against it, have you like fallen susceptible to anything that is, you know, alpha, as
not
far
even,
be it early
not
access
even
or not?
Early. Not even remotely. I've never bought a early access game. The closest thing to early access I've done is kickstart fucking Massive Chalice and what's his face, Double Fine Happy Adventure, but I didn't even play them before they came out. So yeah, I don't know. I just don't like the idea of playing an unfinished game.
You don't like the idea of paying for an unfinished game. What about, like, you played last episode?
Yeah. I played Return of the Obadin. Yeah. And I played it because you recommended it, not because I was interested in it. And I did so. Even after I did so, I kind of regret doing so, because I can't wait to see what that game turns into, because I suspect it's going to be quite different when it actually becomes a thing. Because I think there's like the thing about gaming is that everyone has a great idea for a game, and there's millions of great ideas for games out there. It's just that translating a great idea into a game that's actually good for its duration is so hard that it barely ever happens. So it's quite easy to get like to play like a million demos and go, oh, this game could be amazing, this game could be amazing, and then the actual game comes out, and it's almost never as good as it's prospected to be, because game development's hard, you guys. Game development's fucking hard. So yeah, I don't want to waste my time on things I know aren't good or may not be good in their actual fruition. So I'd rather do things like other things my time, like read a book or watch a movie, for example.
That's my stance. I mean, like, it's I agree with you on those points, but it's also like stuff like Super Hot, or like, you know, the Oberdin, or like a lot of the Game Gen games, they're good just because they are this super bite-sized small chunk.
I haven't played Super Hot. Like, that's crazy. I know.
I don't know if that would be a good game in a full form, but it's great in just like, you know, a 3-level 15-minute thing.
That's another thing.
As a general rule, I'm sort of against like buying into early access stuff. Like, the only things that I have are the ones that Cynic mentioned, the two Double Fine Kickstarters. And even then, I stopped playing Broken Age because I'm like, you know what? I know at a certain point this is going to end and there's not going to be more of it, but it's not going to wrap up. So I just sort of stopped.
Yeah, I guess jumping right into it, Shinboy, you've been playing an early access game.
Have. Kickstarted.
Yes.
I've been playing, well, we've both been playing Massive Chalice. Or I would yell it, but there's other people in this house. But it's in all caps.
Yes.
All the time. I had to correct Massive you on Chalice. The on the Google Doc.
I'm surprised how little, like, it's interesting because I think we had this discussion last time. I'm not sure if I'm into the concepts of Massive Chalice because when they first pitched it, it was Final Fantasy Tactics mixed with what's like XCOM and a couple other things put together.
Tell you what, because this game is not that. It is basically just XCOM.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's like, yeah, there's none of the like overarching like plot or anything else from Final Fantasy Tactics.
Yeah, so, like I don't know.
It's closer to a what's that game that came out recently with the Vikings?
Banner Saga.
Banner Saga. In terms of how it
tell you what, plot. I like Master Chalice more than I like the Banner Saga.
Cool.
At least from a combat point of view. Like, actually really like, I like the setting of the Banner Saga. I like the story of the Banner Saga. But the other day, I was thinking to myself, man, I really like the story and setting of the Banner Saga. I'm going to keep going. I got to my first combat encounter, remember that I hated it, and stopped and uninstalled it immediately.
Yeah. I just wouldn't mind a game like Massive Chalice that had, like, a more, you know, like more aspirations towards an overarching plot. But it does have a plot, doesn't it? And you do make decisions much like Banner Saga on like what you want.
As far as I can tell, and I was talking about this the other day with Herb, that it seems like the only plot, if you want to call it that, in Master Chalice is like, yo, survive long enough that we can charge this thing and kill everything.
Yeah, the whole premise is that you have 300 years to, like, you have to outlast 300 years for the Master Chalice to charge its anti-cadence, or like, you know,
its laser. It's charging its laser.
It's a charge in its laser, and it's a fire in its laser.
Uh-huh. All right.
But so yeah, like
much like a Dragon Ball Z episode, it'll take 300 years for
to. Yeah, and like it does exactly like a Dragon scale Ball up Z and get a little bit tougher as it goes on. But it's a fairly lean looking game with a lot of the, like, it leans heavily into procedural generation to sort of like be its interesting and that's what will drive most of the decisions you make when not in combat.
Mm-hmm.
I know, like, Shiboy, how far have you gone in it? I know last time we talked, you were like 70 years.
I was like 70 years, but then I started over because I was kind of doing poorly because I didn't know what I was doing. And I started over and started my early game strategy a bit different. Like, when I first started, I went another keep to get more people, and then I went like the thing that helps you research faster. And then I realized as people were dying, I was slowly running out of heroes to use. So I started off in my second game just going like three keeps and then recruiting people. So I just had this massive pool of characters to use.
Right. Yeah, I did a similar approach of like I first thing I did, I bought a second keep because a lot of like the first generation will determine a lot of the decisions you make, or like will have repercussions that will like get you further down the line. And then like once you're 2-3 generations in, you were more or less okay if you survived that long. But yeah, it's, I don't want to say it's not a bad game, because I've enjoyed playing it. Like I've gone back to it several times, and I'll probably at least, like, I'll definitely finish one playthrough of it, but like every time I sit down to play it, and you have a similar thing, I've wanted to just end up playing XCOM, either the vanilla or the Long War mod, which like turns XCOM up to 11. You've been wanting to play Fire Emblem, right?
Yeah, because I've determined that this is the secret sauce in Fire Emblem, is that it throws a ton of information at you, but makes it all really easy to parse and process. And the reason I like that more than like XCOM and Banner Saga is that those games really don't throw a lot of information at you at all.
And kind of so like you're sort of it out as you go along.
It's I think especially, they throw a lot of information, but they don't like it's. There's a lot of information to go through, but it's not thrown at you. You have to like interact and like.
It's, click it's on not stuff intuitive and, to find yeah. it at all. And there's really, in all honesty, compared to something like Fire Emblem Awakening, there's not that much.
Like, yeah, there's not like hard-hitting decisions I can fire.
That game throws at you, okay, this is all of this character's stats, here's how far you can move, here's the enemies they will be in range of if you move to any location, you know, here's the hit chance, here's the crit chance.
Yeah. And it's kind of weird because, like, on one hand, Fire Emblem has had, what, a million, like, fucking iterations, or at least four iterations to get there. But
Fire Emblem Awakening, I think, is like 9.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them.
But the thing is, like, if you're making a game today, you have that stuff to draw on. Like, there's no excuse to make a poorly, like, communicated battle system if you're, like, there's so many other fucking games out there that are just as good and have already done it. And all you have to do is, like, just take cues from them, especially if, like, coming off XCOM and how well, A, the good half of XCOM combat, and B, the bad half of XCOM combat. Because you've seen both. Like, the whole, like, visual, not knowing who you can hit when after you move, because XCOM bullshit. That stuff people hate, and you should build on that rather than emulating it. The whole, like, visual thing has always been a problem, and it sounds like Master Charles is some of the...
Yeah, like, there's a few times where I would see an enemy, like, sort of relatively straight ahead and move as far as I could with one of my hunters, and then... Yeah. Like, he would still be out of range. I'm like, how was I supposed to know that he would be out of range?
Exactly.
Well, okay, the thing is, because of the personality traits, which I think when you have a character selected in Master Chalice to move, it should bring up all of their traits instead of having to go through, like, another menu just to see them. Because, like, how am I supposed to remember if this hunter is the specific one that's nearsighted or farsighted or is a pessimist or whatever?
Yeah. Agreed. Like, you should, like, that's the beauty of fucking one of the many beauties of how good Fire Emblem is. When you select a dude, it has all its stats right fucking there, and you can look at them and you go, oh yeah, okay, I want to. Same with Valkyria Chronicles, like, not to crib off
something. Yeah, I have not played that, so that's why I didn't reference that.
Yeah, it's one of those games where, like, you, as the moment you select a dude, you can, like, straight and easily see, like, what his stats are, who people near him stats are, just by, like, selecting them, just get an idea of who you want to put next to whom. It's just, yeah, there's, like, so many things those games do that this game should, like, not to tell them how to develop a game. Like, I don't want to do that, but I want to say, like, when we do have gripes as simple as this, like, come on, like, this has already been solved elsewhere. And if it's solved elsewhere, you should be able to do it.
And it's also, like, it's... This is the early access and, like, you know, the community funded thing of how much, like, what kind of game can they make with X money?
Yeah.
But Shinboy, first off, with the hunters, did you mess around with stealth?
Yes, I really like that. I think that's a really cool way to handle stealth.
Like, yeah, it's with the longest running playthrough I've been going, because I'm over halfway. I'm like 200 years or something. I ended up getting Caper Jacks and Hunters for my two houses. And so that means, like, after the first generation, all of the Alchemists, the third class, just straight up, like, you know, died of old age. And only the Keeps only produce children of the same class type as the Regent.
Okay.
So that's why
I didn't realize that.
You're only getting... Well, and, like, the way you have to do that is you have to make a third Keep and also, like, recruit, like, children. Like, it's... you find children who are magically attuned or whatever with the chalice, and that's how you get, like, you can bring that back. But I really didn't have any use for alchemists because the hunters are kind of OP.
at least right now. It's like alchemists are more unreliable at range than hunters, and like their first skill up
is an option to improve accuracy. Because if they miss, the thing will just land somewhere else and will...
I think that's really cool. It's like, it's not like, oh, it lands in the same spot, but you just magically did zero damage somehow. It's like, no, you actually miss and this thing lands elsewhere.
I mean, like, that's a really cool feature, but that makes me not want to use that, like, that unit.
Well, you just gotta be careful. I think the thing that they get that lets them throw an extra thing without using an action point is really useful, because you basically get an extra turn out of it.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's how I abused fucking Fire Emblems, making sure, like, getting extra moves and stuff as part of the skill tree. Yeah.
But to the point, and, like, I'm not sure, I haven't actually brushed into with Master Chalice since they released on Early Access on Steam. I was only playing a earlier build. Have they released, like, is it still stuck on normal, or can you choose the various options
choose Iron Man? I don't know.
Because along the same line of what you were saying with... not being able to know which units had which, like, statistics of, like, you know, if they have asthma, that mean they, like, if you have them double move, then they're going to be, like, super slow the next round, and, like, the, all those various traits was because the people only did, like, 3 fights, and then they would die of old age if they didn't die in combat. or like maybe even just two fights, and then I'd want to, like, they're getting old age, so I'll retire them and like use the new generation. And if I feel like if they had more fights per generation, I would become more acquainted with the individual soldier, and like then I would actually be able to keep track of that stuff more. Like, do you think that, like, would that help keep track of stuff?
I mean, I don't think that's the necessary issue as long as you surface the information better.
Okay.
I think the main concept of that game is constantly cycling people out, and what you would suggest would get away from that, and you don't have to get away from that as long as you surface the information better.
Well, I mean, like, it was just, I'm not feeling as attached to this game as I am to XCOM and the story of the soldiers. Especially being able to, like, rename the soldiers.
Well, I think the thing is, if you get a lot of combat in with a certain soldier and they gain a lot of experience, you can then assign them to something that is helpful to your kingdom or whatever in a non-combat role. Like, you can do the Sage Right skill, which helps you research things faster. And as people level up, they gain more, I think it's called intuition, which makes that go, you know, even faster.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's that. I could appoint them to be a regent or a partner so that they get experience. I could appoint them to educate the next, like, you know.
The point is, like, I don't think you're supposed to get attached. Like, there's so many things that you're not really supposed to get attached. Which I think it's fine.
I don't know. I don't know. Like, it's yeah. Like, again, when I'm looking at freaking Fire Emblem or Final Fantasy Tactics, who are the reasons I was interested in Mass Effect Chalice in the first place, both those games are games where you fucking fall in love with those characters or at least want to see how they progress and, like,
well,
et cetera, et cetera.
This, like, this stuff we're talking about, the aspects of the game, to me seems similar to, like, the gameplay design of something like Crusader Kings, which I know New Brahma has played, and Noob, you've also watched.
Watched you play the game, yes.
Yeah, you watched me play Master Chalice. What is, like, do you get attached to the bloodline or the people in Crusader Kings, or, like...
No, not in Crusader Kings, because in Crusader Kings, I think... You're very much...
We'll talk briefly on this, then we'll move on. I know groaning
is... And I think the problem is strategy games make it a lot more difficult for me to get invested into the characters, because more frequently I'm thinking of what is the most efficient thing to do compared to an RPG where I would be more focused on the characters themselves rather
than... The thing is, in, like, FF Tactics and Fire Emblem, it's both.
Right, yeah. That's the difference. I think Western strategy games... Oh, I don't know about either of those, but... like, in the strategy games I've played where it's the Paradox or the XCOM, I don't give – I just keep what is the best or the most effective rather than – yeah. And I think that's – we discussed it a little bit where it's sort of like, you know, you were talking about how you really didn't want to marry, like, your 50-year-old guy with a 16-year-old. But at the same time, if it was me, I would be –
The reason why I would want to do that is because that is the optimum match for statistics and fertility and chance of children.
Yeah.
And, like, all the mathematical reasons, which that, like, it's asking me to just completely ignore the story aspect of it or something.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where...
By the way, Shinboy, like, what did you do in that scenario?
What's that? When there's...
When it comes to, like, the region's partner has died and you need to appoint a new partner.
Oh, I just assigned whoever has the best traits that would work.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, yeah.
Yeah. Don't care.
And it's straight up, like, it's one of those things where it might just come down to, like, the cost of labor in the two countries. Like, not to bring up the socio-political aspects, but straight up... In Japan, they have enough fucking people to in those game studios to just sit there and write reams and reams and reams of pages of dialogue between characters that not many people actually see when they play a game. Like, you just have all of that there. They're like those resources and those people who are like that, you know, just into their games that they're making and that don't get paid a lot of money.
Yeah, because like... Yeah. Intelligent Systems has like 130 people working there. Double Fine is 65, and not all of them are working on Massive Chalice.
Well, and also the statistic of it's $10,000 a month for the game pro like developer or something in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just nuts. So yeah, I guess there's reasons these things happening, but it still doesn't change the fact that there's many reasons I'm not interested in Massive Chalice anymore. So there you go.
I'm still going to play it. Like, all this negativity aside, it's still a fun game to play.
I mean, like, we're not trying to be negative.
I love the look of that game.
I really, the art style, I was not a huge fan, but it has grown on me.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I will probably do a full playthrough of this, and I will enjoy it, and I don't feel bad about my purchase because it, like, they did follow through with it. They did make a game, and it's more or less what they promised.
That I disagree with, but okay, continue.
Well, you disagree with because this stuff, like, when they made the pitch for it, the stuff you took from it was, like, you know, the story from Final Fantasy. And like and those aspects, and they were probably thinking of different aspects of the
gameplay games. Of Final Fantasy. Yeah.
But yeah, what else have you been playing, Jimboy?
Let's see. I've played through. We both, I think, have been playing the new Guild Wars 2 stuff.
Oh yes, I have.
I am so interested in hearing about this stuff.
Like, it's really good.
Yeah.
Like fuck. I don't have to download to play Guild Wars 2 right now. But holy shit, you guys made me want to play some Guild Wars 2.
I
what
came to the realization that, like, you know, Guild Wars or ArenaNet does not do a good job of, like, you know, what other MMOs are good at, of, like, you know, making like a open world that has a bunch of interesting stuff for you to do. Like they did that, and there's some interesting stuff, but it's not a continual thing. What they are good at doing is telling a crafted story.
Wait, well, I think you got those two things backwards.
Depends. I'm not sure if you're accurate there.
Yeah, I don't know. Depends on the story. Maybe right, from level 1 to 20.
Hold on, let's.
I mean, like in aspects of the living story sort of thing.
Again, I'm not so sure.
The crafted experience. How about that?
What ArenaNet is really good at? What ArenaNet is good at is getting a map of 100 people to coordinate on one thing.
Yeah.
At least of late.
You're referring to Quaddle?
I am referring to the invasions, and then the marionette, and then to Quaddle, and then the new zone. Like, they have a track record of getting, like, they're not very good at the small amounts of people dungeon stuff. They are very good at the large amounts of people stuff.
Yeah, okay, I thought that was kind of interesting how, just like a quick aside for the dungeon stuff, like, they wanted to, or I heard that they wanted to, like, you know, take another, like, hash at making the dungeon super hard. And the community just, like, outlashed against it. And it's like, no, it is a casual thing for us. Don't change it.
Yep. If you want to go really hard, that's why fractals are there.
Yeah.
Interesting. This whole, like, weird change in the dynamic of Guild Wars 2 work is, like, has, like, totally passed me by. So, like, what is the world of Guild Wars 2 right now?
Would you actually go back?
The world of Guild Wars 2 is living story stuff and then high-level fractals. And then whenever there's a tournament, it's Love.
Yeah, and then it's also, like, you know, it's going around to the various world events and doing that with a bunch of people you don't know, but still, like, doing it really well coordinated.
To answer news questions, like, would I go back to Guild Wars 2? I don't know.
Going back and then just, like, taking in all the new, like, taking a fresh breath of air, taking all the new stuff, and then once you're bored of it, just put it away again.
I was crazily excited when you said there was a way for me to look at the stuff I missed.
Yes, there is. Well, it was season 2. Shinbo, do you want to talk about it?
They introduced the story journal, which just means if you log in, like, all the season 2 stuff is available. Like, I could go back and replay the first episode right now if I wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
But if you missed it, it's like 200 gems, I think, per episode. And all you have to do to get it is log in while it's the active one. You don't have to play any of it or any of that.
More interestingly, if Thurbleton's there and he's got them logged,
them with someone else. You just don't get the rewards.
You don't get any of the rewards or the progress. You still get the cutscenes and the story stuff and whatever.
That's all I care about. So, like, the idea of, so to answer Noob's question, the idea of, like, delving in and seeing everything I've missed in, like, a couple of hits is always being doubled in on at the same time.
And the recent updates have been actually pretty good. Like, the little instance that they did in this one is Cynic, you will appreciate this. It is the Dragon's Lair mission from the prophecies.
I'm trying to remember.
It's the one where Glint's at the end.
That was a good mission.
Mission, basically.
Okay. The Dragon Glint? Wait, what?
Oh, I see.
Yeah. There's a few different bosses, different aspects that you have to fight with different mechanics for each one.
In the Crystal Desert?
Yes.
Yeah.
Basically, you go there and it's all crystally and looking good, and then, yeah.
What are your thoughts on the first part of Echoes of the Past at Salma with that cutscene? Like, just in terms of their, like, the team behind the in-game cutscenes and, like,
The facial animations are actually pretty good. I thought Belinda's face looked really weird, but that's because it's a ghost face and it's supposed to look really weird.
I was more taken aback by Delacroix just because the eyes were super wide, but yeah.
So what are they done with the cutscenes? Like, have they actually
just, are they good they just now? Have like the custom animations for cutscenes and like they hand animate all the different faces and everything.
Yeah, I guess like awesome. I'm not sure how when the last time you played, but it is no longer. It hasn't been for a while. The like 2D background with like weird animation and people talking on either side of the screen.
Thank God.
That it's also no longer the super awkward we're just going to use in-game emotes in these cutscenes.
Oh my God. That's,
see? What?
Whoa. Yeah, they have like a legit like animator team like working on cutscenes and it's no really good.
Holy shit. Did they change the rest of the game or just the new
stuff? No, it's pretty much the new stuff.
Okay, but still, that's really exciting. Like, that holy is cow!
Difference, yeah,
yeah. That's a massive difference. Me and Noob both agree,
and only because, like, hopefully, you know, any listeners and whatnot have been up to it, and you'll forgive us and just like cut forward a couple minutes, unless you want to hear Cynic and Noob's reaction. But do you want to talk about Dry Top before we talk about Silver?
I do not want to talk about Dry Top because I don't care about Dry Top.
Ooh, interesting. So, what is Dry Top?
Dry Top's the first of the two new zones.
Okay.
It's not very interesting.
Is it worse or better than Karkaland?
It's better than Karkaland.
Okay.
That's not a high standard, though.
I actually really like the first little area of Dry Top where there's the town and the mine and everything. I don't like the rest of it.
Is it like the forest to another area?
It's attached to the
Maguma Waste.
Okay, I forgot how we got there initially. It's in Maguma. Yeah. It's to the west side of the map.
Right.
And to give you perspective, you know that bandit camp in Brisbane Metrica? That everyone thought forever that there was gonna be something leading out of there?
Yes. Yeah.
I guess something's leading out of there.
Oh wow, okay. All right. I'm surprised. I'm shocked.
Yeah, so like Dry Top is a lot of thin, winding, like, you know, valleys, I guess, or it's, like.
Do you remember? Did you do this
like that spot with the bandit camp? Like,
did you do the
underground kind of thing?
Did you do the stuff with the Zephyrites and the big old ship and all the jump crystals and all that?
Yes, I did.
There's a lot of that in Dry Top.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool.
Because the story was that it was that the Zephyrites crashed there, so of course there's a bunch of Zephyrite stuff.
Oh, okay, that sounds pretty cute. I don't know. What do you not like about it?
I don't like it because you get put in combat and you still have the crystal skills on.
Oh.
You can't hit anything
until
you think in your mind, oh, wait, I have to get rid of these crystal skills.
I never liked the crystal skills.
I mean, they're fun to jump around, but when you constantly need to, like, okay, I jumped up to this platform, now I have these jumpy skills, and now I need to kill this thing. Oh, wait, I need another crystal because I dropped it to kill this thing. It's kind of annoying to manage.
Yeah, like the worst.
That seems like it's definitely a problem, but it's also a situational problem of just like there are certain pockets of the map that have that issue. There's the other side of it where I'd say a quarter of the zone is just like is susceptible to a sandstorm of which you're like, you know, you're fighting dust mites and stuff. It's kind of like annoying slog. Yeah,
is replaced by Daroot Sandstorm. That doesn't happen.
It's okay. You remember when we were talking when the fractals first came out, and we said it would be neat if there were weather effects.
Yeah,
that is two different times in Dry Top. There's the sandstorm that happens, mm-hmm. and then in that town that you're a fan of, like the first like town you yeah
prosperity.
Yes, there are some mines in there where it gets pitch black like nobody's business.
That sounds fucking cool.
So yeah, it's definitely worth exploring again. But
it's
kind of anticlimactic
because you're in this dark room and you need to find something in the dark mine. But of course, there's a bright green star over what you need to find.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah,
because it's a video game.
Video games. I guess like the issue with it is it's really just a nowhere place that they populated
It's a pain in the ass to get around, and there's not enough waypoints.
Right.
Like, why is there's a big old cave in the south where there's basically some minor story spoiler? Well, actually, not minor, but kind of weird story spoiler. There's a ley line going through this giant cave, and in order to get to it, you need to go to this waypoint that's like hella far away, and run around like basically in a big semicircle to get into it around a cliff face. But there's like four different missions that you need to go in there.
Yeah, what's kind of interesting is with the whole plot that takes place there, you'd think that it would be easy to set up a waypoint.
Yeah. if there's all this magic energy, you would be think even in war to put up a waypoint.
But anyway, that's that, I think it's pretty good coverage on Dry Top. Let's talk about Silver Wastes. I can't remember if that's the right name.
Is that the Waste School? Another new area?
Yes.
Right. Ooh. In summary, so, imagine if they made WoW but made it a PvE zone. That is Silver Wastes.
How does that work?
There are like, four different like.
Okay, yeah, keeps? Slight, like I guess a little bit of a spoiler. Oh, like the main like drive NPCs behind, are attacking. Yeah, the main drive behind yeah. this part that's of living cool. story is a dragon is either awoken or is in the process of waking up, and he's the plant right. dragon.
Yeah,
and you like the second like this zone, Silver Waste, is the Pact is like aggressively trying to fight all of his minions, and it's the it's I think it's another approach on the idea of ore. But they now have a bunch of new systems.
The Pact is like all the different orders coming together, and Trahearne was at the head of it, and everyone hated him.
We are
the good guys.
Yes.
Okay, the good guys. All right.
And there's a camp on the far east end of the zone. I'm just going to explain this mechanically.
Yeah, go for it.
Camp on the far east end of the zone where there's the only waypoint in the zone, which actually makes sense for this area. Mm-hmm. And then as you head further west, kind of on the four corners, there's four different keeps that on a timer. Whatever.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, they aren't big structures.
Okay.
No. And
oh, I see. I see the difference. I see the difference you're trying to say. Okay. Yeah. So the smaller of the two, and blah, blah,
blah. And pretty much on a timer, you can go capture all of them. And there are defend events, and once there's a defend event, there's a repair event, and there's also escorting yaks in between all of them to get supply to build defenses.
That's cool.
And as you complete these events, a meter fills up. And once the meter fills up all the way, a hole breaks open in the floor of each of them. And you can drop in, and there's a specific boss, like specific to that keep, with its own mechanics that you can kill. And if all four keeps defeat their boss, or one of them has two, so bosses, everyone gets extra rewards.
Man, so that sounds that sort of like thing what war should have like, been with the temples. That's what war should have been with the temples, straight up.
It creates this weird thing where it's like, all right, you know, yellow keep, yours is done. Your shortest route is blue, so everyone from there runs north to blue. Stuff like that.
Right.
And like, there's been things, like, I'm not sure how it's been for you guys, Shinboy, but like, whenever I jump in there, it's like multiple commanders trying to coordinate, like, okay, like, I'm the team that's working in this sector of the map. We need more people over here.
Normally, since the colors of the keeps coordinate with the colors of the commander tags, that's normally what happens is, like, dude throws on a red tag and hangs out at red keep. Dude throws on yellow tag, hangs out at yellow keep.
Oh, yeah. Like Cynic, the commander tags can be different colors now.
Yeah, I guess I just figured that out. That's kind of cool. That works. That helps as well. Have they fixed the commander structure? Or is it still just is this still one commander has a bunch of dudes and there's no real like hierarchy?
People
have set it up like, okay, you know, blue commander is going to be running around zerging, red commanders or purple commanders are at specific points to defend. It depends on the server, obviously.
How about like selecting a commander? Is it still just anyone with 100 gold can do it, or
it's more expensive now?
Yeah, it's more expensive, but it is cross character now. Like one commander purchase covers all characters.
Interesting.
But it's 300 gold and a stack of badges.
That sounds awesome because, no, not that part, but like the WoW in PvE stuff sounds fantastic. And that's what, as I said earlier, like that's what ore should have been, like straight up with those temples and all that stuff. That's what ore should have been. But yeah, I don't know. That's cool. It's cool that they're making changes.
It's a really fun zone to hang out and lose a couple hours in because there's always something going on.
Scarily enough, the change you guys are talking about that excites me the most is the change to fucking cutscenes.
Something that's been like that for a while, and I've been wanting to check out.
If you're going to be coming in to do the story stuff, I can understand why that would be the exciting change.
But that sounds cool.
I'm surprised they're doing it now. Yeah. Like they've thought like it's worth changing at this point.
Well, it was a while ago. It was when they started the season, which was months ago, beginning of the year at this point.
Oh, okay. I thought this was just like recently with this update.
I mean, even with season one's ending, wasn't there a little bit of like in-game cutscene stuff with that?
There was a ton. Just it wasn't standing there. It was like when Scarlet was talking to you, you were in a room talking to her. It wasn't the weird side-by-side thing. They ditched that a while ago.
To like fully bring me back, and this is way too much effort and they'll probably never do it, but to actually fully bring me back and think that Guild Wars 2 is a good game again, they need to go back into the story and fix everything.
Oh.
They're kind of acting like that personal story stuff's not there and that you shouldn't pay attention to it.
Exactly. Which, no shit, which is exactly what like people have been acting like for quite a while now who like Guild Wars 2. Like, straight up, if they fix that personal story and make it how it should be.
That's a ton of work, though.
Yeah.
Yep.
But considering that Guild Wars 2 is just going to patch on to Guild Wars 1, probably, sorry, Guild Wars 3 or 2.5 or next expansion is going to patch on to this.
Whatever it is, yeah.
Yeah.
It's totally not worth it for the money, though. It would cost. Yeah. Just straight business sense.
Yeah, I mean, like, it really, it makes me more excited. The idea of the living story, like, I've kind of, you know, gone into it with, yeah, that stuff's already done. Like, the main fight against Zaitan. I was going to say Zinyak. Zinyak's different bad guy, different game.
Okay.
But yeah, it's like that's already done. So it's when they get around to, or if, not if, but when they do the next big story, you know, either a new game or expansion.
It's making me worried that the expansion's going to be a downloadable content for this. Like, I don't want the expansion to be a downloadable content for Guild Wars 2.
What do you mean?
I want it to be anything. I don't want it to be just a monthly update. Hey, like, the next dragon's here. I want the next dragon and all that
to
shit.
To be like a physical box, yeah.
Yeah, to be a thing. To be a thing that I can go out and buy.
Screw physical boxes as a rule, though. So it will be downloadable content for me either way.
The thing that I can go out and buy, I don't care what form it takes, but it has to be like a whole new campaign, like a whole new new fucking classes, a new race to play. That's what I want.
Oh, so an expansion.
Yeah.
Like expansion.
I mean,
like Guild Wars 1.
Just saying, the box art for Guild Wars 2 is pretty good, pretty like clean and well designed.
Just the white box.
There's a white box with a symbol, and like it was a neat symbol for just like, you know, the dragon and the two. That's cool.
Yeah,
I have that box sitting over.
I downloaded a digital version of that game. I don't know.
Yeah, it's great. I downloaded a digital version, then bought a box copy off a friend for like $5.
Oh, okay, that's fair enough.
Just because I wanted the box.
Is that our Guild Wars 2 moment of the week? Is that it? Anything else?
I feel like it's pretty
new stuff's really good.
Yeah,
new stuff's really good. Everyone should play it. Like both story stuff and like open world stuff is good this time around. This is the first time in a long time that I have seen the absolutely I hate it so much subreddit be like universally positive about an update.
Nice, that's awesome. Which means Lena is finally learning from their mistakes rather than like having both hands over both ears and just fucking going no. What we're doing is how we want it to be. Like they're actually changing things, which is awesome. That's cool.
I don't know if they're really changing anything. It's just the content's good.
Yeah.
Well, their approach to content has changed. It's no longer like, hey, we added a new dungeon and like a new fractal. It's, hey, we're actually having like this massive new area with actual stuff to do in it. That is like reminiscent of the stuff people actually like World War when it first came out. Like, yeah, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
In Colin, we trust moving forward. Thoughts?
Word.
Colin's wry smile.
So,
news?
What else you
break before news?
We
have more stuff we've been doing.
I have more stuff that I played. I have two things on this list. One I just sort of was playing briefly because I picked it back up, and the other I have played in its entirety since we last spoke.
But it's an older game. I'm not sure how much we want to spend time on it, but I
just want to talk about a funny thing that happened in the second game that I almost screwed myself over.
What is the second game?
Second game is Final Fantasy X HD, which I picked back up right before the hardest boss fight in the game. Before the Seymour Flux fight, and then I had to grind and took me a whole bunch.
Which one's the Seymour Flux fight again?
When you fight him on the side of the mountain?
Oh, yeah, and you're totally underleveled, unless you've been playing like specifically, a very specific way.
Yeah, I did not have Dispel, which is what I needed to remove his Reflect. But anyway, later on, you fight Unalesca, which that fight is also a bitch because she has Zombie with Cure Spells, but also has Full Death.
Yeah.
So you have to manage keeping people zombie, not zombie, to keep your party alive. But what I did was I cast Reflect on Orin to prevent the cure spells and from basically to prevent death from affecting him. And then real late in the fight, I cast that super early. And then late in the fight, I cast Hastiga, forgetting that I had Reflect on Orin.
Hasted the boss. No. Oh, no.
I sat there. And I saw Reflect Effect go on the boss, and I just...
And you just, like, quit the game.
Just dropped my hands. I'm like, well, I'm going to have to try and survive this. And
I survived it
with
Hastiga
dead on the ground, and Tidus and Orin at about 400 health each.
Jeez. You don't use Yuna? Wait, is she usable at that point? I forget.
I, at that point, Waka was dead, and I did not, and the boss was low enough that I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to keep attacking and hope she dies.
I'm surprised you don't use the most rigged character in the game, though. Like, Yuna's just fucking rigged. Like, she's so strong.
I was using Yuna until I brought, because she had...
Once you get to the Mega Sisters...
She had all kinds... I'm not going to do any of the optional summons, because screw that.
Anima is worth it, but okay. Don't worry.
Anima is worth it, but I don't remember which temples I have done and not done.
Oh, yeah, that sucks. So. Like, you can go into the temple and it shows you which temples you haven't done. Like, the lights are on or off, but, like, there's no real massive deal. Like, you can beat that game without Anima, no problem. Bahamut's pretty strong.
Yeah. Also, I'm past all the hard bosses, except for the final Aeon. But anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
That game's old.
Yeah. That game's great. It's still good. I still love Final Fantasy X.
I still love that combat so much.
But yeah, Divinity Original Sin is pretty cool. Like,
Speaking of games that I love the combat oh so much.
Yeah.
Let's see, if I go to my library and type in Divinity.
Are we getting a lit number of hours?
61 hours of Divinity Original Sin.
It's pretty good, yeah.
I think
Patrick logged it in at 70 hours. So yeah,
I didn't do a lot of the crafting and going around and collecting things and all that. I did most of the side stuff that I could find. Some quests I just didn't find the NPC, or they died, or I couldn't find the item, or I just missed it, whatever.
Right.
But that scratched an itch that I've had for a long time, that game.
Man. It's a really good RPG.
So a really good party-based, old-school RPG.
Yeah, like Dragon Age 1. But you didn't like Dragon Age 1.
I tried Dragon Age 1. I didn't like it.
Yeah.
I tried Baldur's Gate, both 1 and 2, and I did not have the patience to learn, like, AD&D or 2nd Edition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fuck that.
I just wanted something relatively simple, but also really deep, mm-hmm. which that game, like Fire Emblem, is really good at throwing a ton of stats at you and making them really easy to understand.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Like, it draws a line on the ground. Okay, you're going to take this path through this area. These enemies are going to get attacks of opportunity. You're going to use this many action points. It shows it on your bar, so you know just how many action points you'll have remaining once you're done.
That's great.
Depending on buffs, the damage numbers on your skill bar scale.
It gives my only question to you, Shinboy, is how is the writing in plot? Because that's the only reason I didn't pick it up. I heard it was like kind of average. The main
plot is not super interesting, but even if you go back to like a lot of those old school RPGs, the main plots, it's a lot of the small plots like along the way that make the game good.
Yeah,
and those are all mostly interesting.
Hmm.
There's a lot of weird one-off shit in that game that's pretty interesting.
Hmm. Okay.
There's one where like there's like a rat king in this town, and you have to like try and draw him out. And the only way you can draw him out is by getting a wheel of cheese and a vial of poison and crafting poison cheese, and you can draw out one of his minions that eats it and dies. So he comes out like, what the hell is going on out here?
That's all. Okay, that's some D&D shit right there. I like it.
Yep,
that's cool.
And of course, you can choose to either resolve things, because this rat king, of course, has a feud with the cat in town. So you have to choose who you want to side with.
Nice.
Stuff like that.
Man, yeah, that sounds cool. I don't know. It's been a while. Like, how do you think, we're getting up to that time, how do you think your, like, it'll stack in your GOT white list this year?
It's probably my number one.
Damn. Holy shit. There you go.
Well, one, I haven't played as many games this year as I did last year, but two,
me neither.
I really like that game.
Nice.
That game is super fun to just mess around with mechanics-wise.
Right.
Like, oh, it's raining, so now, whoops, I accidentally stunned everyone. Or
with lightning and stuff, right?
Yeah, because, like, I played an archer, and that archer is basically, it's the opposite of the type of archer that I normally like playing. You don't do a lot of direct damage. Right. You are basically like the Green Arrow, where you have a ton of different arrow types.
Oh, that's cool. Like Amazon in D2. Back in the day.
Yeah, it's like, okay, you have a knockdown arrow, you have a poison cloud arrow, you have a shock arrow, you have a silver arrow that reduces armor, you have arrow, stuff like that.
I see, like, the ranged damage support. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, you're like ranged offensive support with some defensive support. Like, you can cure poison, you can cure bleeds, stuff like that.
Awesome.
I'm not sure why it's the charm arrow that, like, makes me think, that wouldn't make sense. Everybody else on that list is like, yeah, sure, whatever.
I mean, there's a charm spell, which you also get as a ranger.
Yeah.
The thing I like, though, is that it very clearly explains if this action costs more action points than normal, or has a lower percent chance of hitting. Why? So it's like, oh, this witchcraft spell costs 10 action points instead of 8 because you don't have high enough witchcraft. Or this spell has only a 75% chance of hitting because you have low intelligence and stuff like that.
That's awesome. That's so good.
I love that. Really good about that.
Yeah. I just wish more games did shit like that. You have just obvious stats that you can look at and go, okay, this is what I'm
doing. There's really funny stuff that you can do because, like, you have two main characters essentially, and it comes down to the point where this is where playing in co-op is really funny because if you actually get into character with those characters, they can have arguments.
That's cool.
So, like, awesome. Albino and Luby were playing and they did their whole campaign co-op. I started a co-op game, then played single player once the guy that I was playing with just times didn't work out. So I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to start my own game. And there was one part where, like, one of them tried to sell the other into slavery, like, to this random dude. And they were joking about it. Like, I was just doing what I thought would be best for you. I thought you would be happy with this man. And there are dialogue options. And then the way all disputes are settled in that game is rock, paper, scissors.
Nice. Of course.
So, yeah, it's really, really good.
That's cool.
There's a lot of neat little things like that. And it's really open with classes, which I like in those types of games where you can dabble in everything.
I'm hoping for Thurbleton to do the switcheroo between topics and or people.
Yeah, I can do the switcheroo. I'm just ruminating on, like, I've heard so many people say good things about Divinity Original Sin.
Yeah.
But it's like, I just don't know if RPGs are right for me, or at least not the, like, hardcore kind, like,
D&D stuff.
I've enjoyed D&D stuff. I just couldn't get into, like, Dragon Age Origins. I could never actually finish. I think
I could not get into Dragon Age Origins either. And this is probably my favorite game to come out this year.
And, like, Diablo 3, which isn't really an RPG at all.
Dragon Age Origins and Diablo 3.
This is the combat, and this is similar. It's in vein of XCOM, where the game is, like, real time, but as soon as you enter combat, it switches to turn base.
Nice.
It's like a weird, like, turn base bubble, where if, like, say you have, because you can, like, link party members to follow you around, but if you unlink them and one party member gets into combat, they're the only one that's in the turn-based system and everyone else can run around freely.
XCOM is, it, like, there are, it's, like, round-based almost. There's, like, there's times where you're fighting and then you go back to the base, and, like, when you're back at the base, you, like, that is mentally the time of, like, okay, I'm going to walk away from this and take a break.
And you can do that. They're just like, you can go back to town and sell things and merchants and bullshit with NPCs and see if there are any other quests you can pick up or whatever.
Yeah, but my brain just says, keep playing. And then, like, it doesn't realize, like, oh, geez, I'm not having fun anymore. I'm getting tired.
But it's like one of those things where, like, the last dungeon in the game is a puzzle dungeon. So it's not all combat.
Yeah.
There's a trick to that dungeon that pissed me off when people who had already finished the game previous told me what it was, but I'm not going to spoil it here.
Right on.
I will add it to my wish list, and
if you play it, we should play co-op.
Yeah, I mean, like,
because that way I won't put any input in on the story. I'll let you figure it out, but I want to play that game with a different, like, build and see how I like it.
That would definitely be fun to do, because it's hard for me to get into those solo. Cynic, you have not been doing much since you've been doing
schooling. I haven't played much at all. But you just saw a movie. Yes, I just watched a movie that I was looking forward to all year, and I'm not sure if that movie was worth looking forward to all year, but it's still pretty good. I watched Interstellar, the latest film by the man who made Memento.
Oh, the man who made The Prestige.
Yeah, Christopher Nolan.
The man who made Batman Begins.
Batman Begins, Dark Knight, Inception.
There was only two of those Batman movies.
Yeah, exactly. There's not a third. What are you talking about? Anyway, yeah, no, it was pretty good. I love sci-fi, and I love the fact that he had the courage to do a fucking 2 hour and, like, 50 minute long movie in 2014.
Wait, hold on. I have to read something out here. I went to the Prestige Wikipedia page because when I mention something, I often like to read up on it. And on here it was the second co-production film between Disney and Warner Brothers, the first being Air Bud.
What?
Wow. and they got...
That's the movie with the basketball dog, right? The basketball dog?
Yes, that is the movie. The basketball dog.
Wait, was it basketball first? I thought it was the
volleyball. Oh, it was basketball first.
Okay.
That's...
We need to stop talking about Air Bud.
It just sounds really great. Like it's a movie about that takes a lot of chances on its audience, and not everyone will like it. Like there's a whole like thing. I'm not sure how much I can go into it without spoiling it, but it's like Shinbo, you've watched it all, right? Like, correct. How do you like it?
I liked it. I thought it had a neat sort of old school meets new school feel to it.
Yeah, it takes its time. Like a lot of new movies don't. Like it's a good like.
Also, just in terms of the production, like with there being no green screen used at all, and
but there's no green screen in that movie.
Really? I'm pretty sure. If there is, it's very minimal. It's mostly just miniatures and models.
I'm not surprised. Like it's
if you okay, this is not really a spoiler, but they recreate the famous sort of like spinning dock scene from 2001.
Yeah,
and when you're watching that scene, it's very clear that these are two physical objects that are trying to meet, and not like CGI.
Yeah,
especially like, in IMAX, which is when I saw
it. As a person who recently read The Martian, like there's a lot of cross between the two movies in their respect of actual physics, but also like this kind of breaks that as well.
Like the theme of it, really
crazy. Yeah, like
the theme for Interstellar and Martian are very different, but the way they handle sort of making sure they dot the I's and cross the T's when it comes to science.
Yes. Except at a certain point. Yeah. Like The Martian is 100% that, or like 99.95% that. This kind of takes it 80% of the way, and then just use like pseudoscience for the last 20%, like dealing with black holes.
Stuff that's like, I guess that could happen, but we don't really know, so we can't really dispute it.
Yeah, like or like if there's like the gravity on a planet that's strong enough to like fucking be to manipulate time by what 70x or some shit like that, and yet you can still walk on
that,
it.
That is okay. Yeah, I'll say because that exists. I don't know if you could live on it, but that totally exists. Exactly.
Like, yeah, and there's like little basic things like, hey, you have to choose between two planets. One is a fucking ice world. One is covered in water, and the other one has land. Which one would you choose? Like, fuck you. As if it's actually that difficult to choose between these fucking three. Like this, like little dumb shit like that. But, yeah, and that doesn't really cost too much in spoilers because you have no idea what I'm talking about when I say that. Anyway, you'll see when you actually see the movie. It is, I was just impressed by the acting in it. And I think everyone nailed it during that movie. I was shocked at the level performances brought. And the fact that Christopher Nolan kind of did like an homage to old sci-fi, and that's really cool. I don't know. If you really
where
like
it falls apart for me is Christopher Nolan is a very cold director. If you get what I mean, like he does not do sentimental and emotional well. He does sort of, well, I guess, cold well.
Yeah,
I guess in this movie, both senses of that word.
Yeah, and there's definitely like moments that are pretty harsh in this movie, and people who are not everyone survives the mission. Let's just say that. But at the same time, like he commits one of my gripes with some other movies, and I suspect he did so because of audience feedback, because I doubt it was his decision. But there's a lot of people who survived this movie that you wouldn't think would survive, which I guess. And anyway, like it's just cool. Like it's definitely worth watching. It's definitely like in that 70 to 80% it's been getting, in my opinion.
If we're doing the giant bomb scale, it is a solid four.
Four stars. Yeah, it's a solid four. It is a solid four. Definitely enjoyable. And it was
as far really as good. I'm concerned, you can never really complain about a solid four.
Yeah, I agree. There's always those things you'd rather be different. That's the case with 84 star. So there you go. That's my time this week. That's essentially the only thing interesting I have to talk about.
Nice.
I don't want to spoil much of it, so there's much I can say.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. It's just like, is it something people who are on the fence interested in it, like, is it something you'd want, like, it deserves the big screen, or is it something they can just wait
to go see it in IMAX if you can?
The biggest screen.
Yes.
It's not Gravity, but it's still pretty good.
But no, go see it in IMAX if you can, because that's what it was filmed on.
Yeah. Like, it's not the visual splendor or something like that, but it's still very much worth watching.
It totally is, but in a completely different way.
I don't know. Like, there's only one scene I can point to that was like, wow, that would be amazing on a big screen.
It is, in my opinion, like just as visually impressive as Gravity, but for a completely different reason.
What would you point to? Like, I can't just
knowing that there was minimal computer effects used.
Oh, okay.
A lot of those scenes are super impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that. I can definitely see that.
I mean, like, maybe not like technically impressive, but just from like the image that they managed to get on screen and how they went about doing that is really impressive.
And there's definitely like its image of the future is really well depicted. Like there's definitely like I can see a future being like that, and the way they bring that to screen is definitely very visually interesting. Because it's like it's a future that's quite a while away from our future, but it looks like us. And that's like something I think is missing from a lot of other sci-fi, and that like some sci-fi I think does really well because they depict the future with us still using M4s. Because we would. Like that's humanity. Like we just fucking use the same shit for years and years. We dressed almost the same as we did before.
We will still be using M4s a century into the future because the government contracts and like the amount of like the people who would lose jobs in the like states and all that, the senators would never approve.
Also, it works.
Yeah, it works really well. It might be like a revision of the M4, but it'd still be an M4, like just straight up. And
it's like the M4 is basically just like a revision of the M16.
Yeah, and it's exactly, or it's kind of, yeah. It's a case of like seeing a future in a way that is perfectly believable because hey, that's how we are now. Like
it's like if we're going into the cars they use specifically, the M4 carbine is just the natural evolution of the M16 carbine. That's how it is.
And I mean, like, not exactly because, like, obviously there's some engineering that made that difference, but,
like, here... But, like, essentially the same guns has been used for, like, 60 years at this point.
Since World War II, yeah. And it's...
No.
Or just after?
Vietnam War.
Korea, to be really
specific. AR-15?
Like, an M16 was introduced in, like, the late 50s.
Yeah, that's...
The early 60s.
That's after Korea.
I guess you're right, yeah.
The only thing wrong with Interstellar, in my opinion, and for some reason really got to me, is that everyone was using 4x3 screens. I mean, come on. Like, no one does
space
that.
Restrictions. I don't know.
No, in straight up, like, in houses and stuff, it was this fucking old CRTs and shit. That's, I couldn't. That's the only thing that broke it for me. Like, honestly, I was like, what are you? Yeah, just completely weird. But I have to say, best characters in that movie, aside from the ever beautiful female lead, which I keep forgetting the name of.
Anne Hathaway.
Was the robots in that movie. The robots in that movie are great.
Robots are great.
Robots in sci-fi are always great. There you go. It continuing the trend of R2-D2, the robots are great.
Yeah, just really good. Yeah, I'll agree to that.
Yeah.
Robots in sci-fi movies are really awesome. I guess just running out the what we've been playing section, we've already talked about for what I've been doing, Massive Chalice and Guild Wars 2, so I won't repeat that. I'll talk about Damned, which I think Durin like briefly touched on a previous episode, but like right before we ended it, and I don't think he gave it justice.
What is Damned?
Damned is it's actually a game that is like not on early access. It just looks janky as all get out.
Okay, great.
Like, you can tell it's a small team sort of thing.
Okay, yep.
But it's the same idea as Evolve, like four players working cooperatively versus a fifth player that is, like, you know, much more powerful and different abilities, but in a horror sense.
Is it also like Evolve in that it is no fun at all?
Oh snap!
I think
wow!
I definitely had fun with it, and it was definitely a exciting experience. However, I'm not sure after like repeated play sessions, it will be like once we've seen all the content, if it's going to be that fun.
Did you guys play the Evolve beta?
Like recently? I did. It was not fun at all.
It was not very good.
I'm so curious.
None of the classes are fun. I think the game, like, okay. I've had this weird issue with CryEngine games where even though it's totally running at 60, it looks and feels sluggish as hell.
Really?
I felt that with Crysis 2 and 3, and I felt the same thing in Evolve.
I can see. You know what? Crysis 2 did feel heavy, and 3. They feel heavy. I don't know why.
Yeah, and Evolve has that same problem where I don't think it feels good.
Right.
I think the support class, which is the one I was most excited to play, is really, really bad. Because, like, it has the TF2 medic thing, but it's a shield, but you can't really do anything else while using it.
Wait, so this is that monster game, right?
With
the big monster. Yeah, that monster game.
Single big monster.
Yeah, and so essentially one player is playing the monster, not multiple. There's one player.
It's 4v1.
Yeah, so it's oh right, yeah, because that's the symbol of their stupid marketing campaign. So there's classes, class based system.
Yes.
Yeah. There's you play. There's one of each class on the human team. There's like it's like assault, medic, trapper, and support. I don't know; those names might be off, but that gives you the general gist of what it is.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And so essentially it's just you're in a jungle environment and you have to hunt the monster. That's the beyond and all of the game. Okay. So it's a purely multiplayer shooter.
Correct.
Okay. And so essentially there's nothing looking at that, I already know pretty much everything I need to know about this game. Yep. Is there anything interesting about its mechanics? Like what is cool here? Like is the monster
the only thing that I thought was cool is that the trapper has a giant bubble shield that traps you and theoretically the monster inside of it so he can't run away.
Can you fire at it while it's in the bubble shield?
I mean, yeah, it's just like a pretty much walls off an area that no one can leave until it goes away.
Oh, like stone wall. I'm sorry, bone wall with Necromancer and Diablo 2.
Yeah. That's a good example. That's a great example.
Except it's like really big.
Okay, you're right. So straight up, like it's just a case of it's a shooter where you fight a single monster and like all of it depends upon how fun it is to play, and it sounds like it's not fun to play.
I don't know whether it's just.
I imagine it'll be fun with like if you have a 4-player team that knows what they're doing, possibly yeah, against the thing fifth is, person. Like, who's like who's
none
also
of the classes
it?
Seem fun. That's yeah. the biggest issue. Like the assault doesn't feel like you're doing enough damage. The shield dude on the support, like I'm extremely disappointed in the support. It feels like a worse TF2 medic. The trapper seems kind of cool, and then I didn't play the medic because I just didn't care enough at that point, and I already uninstalled it.
I think it suffers from like with the way it is designed and the way it was packaged to people was something more of like a sport, like an e-sport or whatever.
Yeah, I'm sure it could still be that.
Yeah, like and it could end up being that, but if you look like at least in the video game sense. Games are meant to be fun. Sports are meant to be competitive. It's like League of Legends or Dota. Those are meant to be much more competitive.
Those are also fun if you enjoy. I think drawing that line in the sand and saying these things are this and those things are that is silly.
And like you can still have fun experiences with those, but it's not
the reason they're popular in the first place is because they are fun.
Yeah.
The competitiveness came at like the sort of quote e-sportness came afterwards because there are a lot of people who are enjoying it because it was fun.
And I'm not saying like basketball isn't fun.
I mean, if you said that, I would agree with you.
But what do you mean in the context of Evolve? Like, how is this? How could this be a sport?
They were billing it as
asymmetric
indie sport.
Really? But yeah. It's asymmetric. Like that doesn't make.
I don't know how that would work either. But
yeah,
whatever. I'm not on their marketing team.
I'm not sure if they know how it will work either. But yeah, so
they should worry about people enjoying playing it before people enjoying playing it in a competitive setting.
I agree. Because what the fuck?
So one leads to the other.
Did anyone here play the monster?
No.
No, because again, I just uninstalled it because I'm like, this is not fun.
I played the monster in Damned. I can talk about that.
Oh, yeah, that's what we're talking about. Sorry about that. I was just curious. Like, we actually played a game that's maybe topical for once. And okay, yeah, all right, sure. Go back to Damned.
Okay, I had an amazing time playing Damned. And I ended up doing with... Three other friends in the Skype call, and we just did like, you know, three players versus the fourth monster. But it's imagine taking away the puzzles and playing like an Amnesia like engine game.
Oh, okay.
Where the objective for the players is you need to collect like you need to escape, and in order to escape you need to get the axe, which is hidden in a locker, which, you know, the key to that is hidden in another safe box, which you have to get a key like to unlock that, and this like whole chain going down.
Why would you have an axe behind a key?
Maybe you need to get a gun, but the gun is in a weapons case.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, that makes sense.
Sort
All right.
of thing.
All right.
But yeah, it's often to progress through the level as well. You need to find the keys to unlock the doors to keep going to find stuff. And it's super hard for the humans to win, to escape.
Or what's the enemy doing?
The enemy, yeah. Which first, like, it does the same thing as Evolve and have multiple types of enemies that aren't, as far as I know, they aren't specific to the maps, but they do an interesting and a good an honest effort of like making it a challenge for. It's not super easy, like, you know. Another game of this type is like the Stop It Slender mod for Gary's mod, which Slender Man is just fully overpowered and can just end the game in 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
For one of the two monsters, and I'll put the most effort on those guys, you play like a phantom of sorts, like a specter, who you can't see any players. The level is sort of like in the shrouded mist for you, but you can phase through doors, and if you just walk into anybody, they will instantly get killed. And if they... there's no real health. It's just if the monster sees you, you're done, and you respond.
Can you hear them? Like, how do you find them?
How you find them is if they run, you can, like, then they appear, and you can see them.
Oh.
And if you get close to them while they're, like, in this little window of opportunity, you can see their flashlight, even if they stand still. So, like, the objective is to just, like, outrun the monster until you're far enough away, and then, like, walk... It reminded me most of the end of The Shining. So like the monster's chasing you, he knows what path you took, but then you have to like backtrack a little bit and get out of the way of the path of the specter.
Right.
And also it's got, we use Skype, but does have directional voice, and I believe the specter can hear stuff like that.
That's awesome.
So that's one of them. The other one, I think it's called the Lurker, which kind of does look like a Resident Evil Lurker guy that is super scary.
Right.
It's super scary in that it's not that well modeled, and it's just like
SCP. SCP can be scary.
Yeah,
and not well
it's
modeled.
Okay. Yeah. It's scary, and I'll give an explanation. It also can't see the players initially, and it lays traps around the level. And if the player gets too near it, it'll set off the trap. And then if the monster gets alerted to it, if he gets to that area fast enough, he can like blip into existence and go from like ethereal to corporeal. And then it's just a matter of time. Like, oh, if I see you, boom, you're done.
Right. Okay.
But then like he can't phase through doors when he's in corporeal form. So the idea is to like, you know, if he's chasing you, get out of the way and like shut the door and then run away from him and stuff like that.
That's cool.
So the scary time is, I'll give a little bit of an example. We're playing in this like, it's all like old Victorian era stuff, and a lot of the humans are kind of tropes of like one is a priest with a Bible, one is a dude who just like straight up looks like Freddy from the Scooby Doo gang.
Great.
And just perfect. Like there's like this black guy who's kind of like bookish looking, and there's this girl who I don't think is like any real trope, but
she's the girl.
She's the token girl. Yeah. But anyway, we're in this like Victorian era kitchen, and Dern is just like. We just keep fumbling over traps, and Dern just shows up, like, boom, takes us out. And, you know, we'll just be walking along, set off the trap, and then Dern just blips right in front of us and just swipes us. So it's that aspect of, like, oh, there's this, you know, 7-foot fleshy-looking thing that just, you know, has this mandible that shows up and just takes you out. It's a pretty good jump scare.
Nice.
Completely unintentional by Dern's part, but it's a good proceed, like, you know.
Nice. Yeah, that's like a what do they used to call it when gameplay kind of becomes its own
emergent
story.
Gameplay.
Emergent gameplay. That's emergent gameplay.
So here's where the beauty of it comes in, and like I said at the beginning, and once the story's done, that'll be it. It is like Amnesia style. So I'm in the kitchen of this haunted like this you know spooky you know diner or whatever, and I hear Dern is like chasing someone off in the next room. And I notice that there is this giant cupboard or it's in the kitchen and like, oh, wow, that looks just like the wardrobe in Amnesia. I could hide in there. And the way you open doors is just like you have to click and drag the mouse to slide it open.
Right.
And I opened both doors and there's one of the other players who is just like chilling in there. And it's just like says on Skype, don't say anything and closes the doors. And I was just cracking up, and then like Dern shows up and just one shots me, and I couldn't do anything because I was laughing so hard.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, But yeah, it's a good game. I'd say if you want to check it out, it took about 30 minutes to get it working correctly. It was like kind of choppy frame rate, and one of us had to like uninstall and reinstall. It was $20.
Okay.
Which is a pretty hefty price.
That is a hefty price.
Yeah.
It was cheaper during early access. I picked it up then.
I imagine it was, and then also it's worth looking up to see if it goes on sale. Like I imagine if you wait till next Halloween, it would probably be on sale then.
Right. It was on sale on Halloween.
I believe so.
Okay.
I'm fairly certain it was. I think the developers are trying to put keep the community going and the quality of life stuff. Like I think they've talked about either adding more levels or adding more monsters.
Right.
It's worth checking out. The other game I've been playing, it's not a new game at all, but it's still one that I was surprised I hadn't noticed how awesome it was, is Rogue Legacy.
Oh, nice.
That sounds like your game.
It is definitely.
I cannot believe you did not play that before.
I've owned it for the longest time, but it was just like...
Yeah.
I didn't really have any good excuse for not playing it other than just like, I don't want to do it.
It's so good.
Much like Divinity is my game, that seems like that is your game.
It wasn't until during Extra Life I had a friend come over and I just had the idea of like, I'm going to be super tired at this point. We'll just like pass the controller back and forth and talk.
Nice.
And then he promptly just ended up playing while I tried to recoup midway through the marathon. Just the whole idea of like you can do it is the opposite of Spelunky almost, where doing a run in it to completion
always gives you something.
Really good value.
Yeah, like it's like Dark Souls. Every time you do something different or new, you get rewarded from it. Either from information, like knowing a new spot in.
Does it have a satisfying feeling of like always moving forward?
Yeah. Yes. Like it's you can start a run off trying to work on something. But then, like, it's, I'll start this run off, I'll try and get, 700 gold so I can start working on upgrading, my sword damage or my spell damage. And then you just might have a really good run where you make it all the way to, one of the bosses or you unlock some... Because a lot of the unlocks, like, double jump or dash or...
Runes that you have to find in the world, yeah.
So
like, you can find those and then you're like, yeah, then you kind of want to die because you want to try it because you have to die to go to the armorsmith to get that thing. But then you want the money and then you're having a good run. You want to keep going. And it just compounds fun with progression in a really great and smart way.
And like as near as I can tell, it doesn't the game doesn't scale per se. It's like some of the procedural generated stuff will be tougher than others. But the whole design of you start off in the first world and then the forest is always eventually to the right. The Maya is always eventually up and hell is eventually down. So that is a neat little system, but the most awesome thing that I've been enjoying about Rogue Legacy is that there are these just randomly generated rooms that are just oddball stuff that one example is shooting
fairy chest room,
shooting gallery, this clown and just it looks like the circus has moved into this dungeon, and it's like oh, just hit all these targets. If there's less than 10, you get a prize. And it's a nice, relaxing, fun thing. The other thing they do though is they kind of have developer diaries and they highlight the previous games they've made and they talk about. We worked on this game and this is a little paragraph of text and this was a horrible decision for us. it's been a neat thing of seeing the other stuff that developers have made and kind of putting a human face to it's the people who've made it. And I'm not sure if that's something that was always in or was put in after it became a commercial success, but it's definitely one of the more awesome, memorable things about the game.
Cool. Yeah, that definitely sounds cool, doesn't it?
Fun.
And also it's available on just about every damn system you want. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, pretty much.
So
I've heard the Vita version getting some significant recommendations for anyone out there who still has Vita.
Yeah. I think that is everything we've been playing. We're going to cut to a quick break.
Woo!
All right.
Woo.
We'll be back in just a second with Editing Magic.
Yay!
All right. And now we're going to quickly go over the news topics we could wrangle together for past week or so.
Yay!
I guess first on the list, Grand Theft Auto, they've teased a little bit more about getting first-person mode or some weird nonsense, as well as, hey, remember how much we liked the heists, and they said there's going to be a bunch of online heists when the game first came out? They haven't quite forgot, or they remembered that, about that stuff, and that's going to be coming soonish.
I don't know. I'm not a GTA guy. Okay, there you go. Noob, are you excited about it, Noob?
I'm not. I don't give a shit about the multiplayer in Grand Theft Auto. Like, that's not why I'm going to buy this game. No.
All right, hold on. Let's take stock here. Do you really care about GTA as a whole?
I'll be excited about, like, the mods. Like, I'll be
one
excited
word answer, yes or no. Do you care about GTA as a whole?
Not really.
Okay. Cynic, you don't care about GTA as a whole.
Fuck no, never.
You don't care. You don't care about the online portion.
No, I don't give a shit about. I honestly, if this game didn't come out on PC, I would not care. Honestly, okay. I'm buying it because it's just out.
And then, so we're 3 out of 3.
Yeah.
3 out of 3. And then, as we bring it around to myself, I regard GTA up there with Halo as the biggest franchise in gaming that I don't give a shit about.
Oh, really?
Really?
Okay.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
So
there you go. That's the Scotchcast's opinion on GTA. No, yep. Honestly. My only interest is how they're executing the first-person shooting element, but
yeah,
it sounds kind of cool.
I don't want to say, hey, like I will probably end up buying it on PC and like or like PS4 or whatever, but like I want to play the online heist with other people.
Hmm.
Rather than playing the online heist by myself, that's
the online by yourself sounds great.
Yeah. I like to play all of my MMOs by myself.
Yeah. That's how MMOs are supposed to be played.
All right, next thing. Blizzard cobbled together a Team Fortress 2 style game using the assets from Titan. They named it Overwatch. I think
it's TF2, okay. It's kind of crazy.
I haven't seen any of the footage of that game. I just saw the art style. I'm like, hey, that looks like a bit like
Reaper,
Pixar.
OP, please nerf.
Yeah. It looks neat, but like the greater thing behind this that I'm curious about is it. Okay, so I attribute Blizzard and Warcraft 3 with like making the whole MOBA genre, which was insane. It's its own big thing now, and
it's
the biggest comparison. Oh, okay.
It wasn't it's Blizzard that
made
that.
Ice Frog
that
was, and
no,
it wasn't even Ice Frog. It was just a dude.
Those guys.
Yeah, like it birthed out of the community because they had set up this. Like, very easy to set up, like, game editor.
Yeah.
And so, like, they've given the community the tools to make their own fun. And biggest comparison to Overwatch is Team Fortress 2, which has, like, it's the whole hat system and just, like, a ton of community-made stuff. I've also seen that with the new products being made by Blizzard, they are trying to, like, make the emergent and procedural gameplay. They don't want to provide the tools for players. And so I'm curious if Overwatch is going to be, like, it might be a fun game, but is it going to be, like, a long-lasting game like...
I doubt it.
Team Fortress 2.
I mean, people were doubting Blizzard with Hearthstone, and look what happened with that, so never count Blizzard out.
Yeah.
Wait. Hearthstone hasn't become, like, a whole fucking thing.
Not, it has not become...
Oh, no, Hearthstone is fucking on fire.
Yes.
I swear it depends who you ask. Half the people are like, yeah, Hearthstone, I kind of played it for a while, then got bored of it.
Yeah,
and
a lot
people are like, oh my God.
Everyone I know who's
thing.
Played Hearthstone has stopped playing Hearthstone.
Yeah.
I know plenty of people who still play Hearthstone. I know a lot of people will enjoy it because it's a super casual game. I know there are plenty of streamers that have made a living off Hearthstone. I know there are tournaments of Hearthstone. Like, it is esports level kind of craziness as well.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the kind of story that really interests me. It's like, there's this weird, like, sect of the online community that just has fallen in love with watching and playing Hearthstone, and I have no idea how many people
that
actually is.
It's surprising for me.
But it's like one of those things where they're making, if Hearthstone was not doing well, they would not have just released an expansion followed by announcing another expansion.
Oh, yeah. No. I don't disagree that it's doing well, but I didn't think it lit on fire like previous Blizzard games.
Mm-hmm. Maybe not on the same level as, like, actually, StarCraft is a bad example because that game died.
Yeah. That game, wow. Well, fucking and crash and burn.
I think a lot of the people, a lot of the people you guys have heard of who have, like, picked it up, thought it was neat, and then dropped it, are the people who have played previous Blizzard games and are like have picked it up because of the fact that it's a Blizzard game. I think a fair portion of the people who are enjoying it now and have really gotten onto it don't get like half the references to the Blizzard games. Like they
don't even think like there's a lot of people who are probably just playing Hearthstone on their iPad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
There's that whole angle, which I'm sure is making them a ton of money.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. No, that's like a huge market that doesn't even enter my radar personally. I don't know.
That's what I mean. But you're right. But like I mentioned just on the Bombcast this week that I think they actually used the phrase Hearthstone to set the world on fire because it actually did.
Literally,
like chunks of the world burst into flame because people's iPads were overheating because they're playing too much Hearthstone.
Oh, I see where you're going with it. Okay.
Okay. Nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
I brought it all back.
So jumping back to Overwatch, I mean, like, what do you think the game is like?
If Hearthstone was that popular, I don't know if I'm the person that this is targeted towards, but maybe it could be like one of those things where maybe they're looking at targeting people who don't play TF2, or maybe
what Blizzard does is they take a very popular game or genre, and then they make their own version of that game and release it and take over the world with that version, with their version of the game, and that normally works. Because those games are normally pretty like low profile. But this is a Valve game that they're trying to emulate. I don't know if it'll work this time, but I'm not counting them out.
Because Heroes of the Storm isn't seeming to be lighting the world on fire either. So
yeah, it's also a very limited release currently. But
yeah, but it's competing
in terms of just general hype. I agree. It doesn't seem to be.
I mean, like doing it's crazy. It's not. Like garnering any big attention, but I also hear a lot of people like that. People who are disenfranchised with Dota and League, but still enjoy the MOBA style, are always like, "Well, I'm just going to wait till like there are people with rapt attention waiting for when that becomes available for people to play."
Interesting. Yeah, again, like these are parts of the community I don't have too much contact with. Maybe that's the people this is for. Like maybe that's people are waiting for a newer game in the TF2 like kind of.
That game is really old, you guys.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And maybe this will have some like parts to it, like balancing to it, or like just like mechanics to it that's differentiated itself from TF2. Because I haven't seen the trailers. Like, is there anything in this that they've shown in terms of mechanically that's different?
I mean, obviously, like some of the classes are different and all that, but in terms of what it is, it looks like an objective based sort of the character you pick is your class type shooter.
Okay. All right. Is it more like a Super Monday Night Combat, or is it more like
a short dude who throws down a turret and then beats it with a wrench to make it work better?
Yep. Really? Like
that.
It's a video game.
Okay, Blizzard. All right.
I guess next we'll go the bottom two because those are quick ones. Bloodborne got delayed.
That's a bummer.
It's a bummer, but also it's like sweet. They'll have time to put polish on it.
I was shocked when they said it was coming out that early, and the fact that it's delayed is like, oh, yeah, sure. I'm expecting like the end of next year rather than.
Although, I wouldn't be surprised if it's delayed again. Now, just thinking about the games like that had major delays that have come out have been Drive Club, which got like a year delay, Watch Dogs, did Assassin's Creed get delayed at all?
Yeah, it did, I think.
Yeah.
It did. I don't know if
I don't think it did.
Wasn't it last year? No? Okay. All right. Maybe I'm not.
Say Assassin's Creed? Because there's Assassin's Creed every year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just right. I hope that game's good. And if they just want a little bit more time to actually make it right and they're not like panicking and that sort of thing, then sweet.
A month delay doesn't concern me. Like the last game that had a month delay, I think was even Second Son. I swear they had a small delay to it, and that turned out pretty great. I used to like that game a lot. A lot of people bam out that game, but I think it's still pretty fucking solid.
It looks good.
Yeah.
I think it's the same sort of thing as Remember Me. I feel like it looks good, but like the gameplay aspects of it are.
Oh no! A bummer when you get something, the late game stuff, it plays so well. The biggest problem about Infinite Second Son is that you can't mix up powers, and there's no, like, the actual fact you have four powers doesn't really come into it. Bloodborne is made by the guys who fucking made Dark Souls and Demon Souls. Like, it could be broken as fuck and people still love it. It's one of those cases where it all comes down to them executing on the gameplay, and if they do, everyone will love it. So I don't really have too much fear about that game. Like, it could be a small ass, like, 10-hour game, but play like a Dark Souls and just be really solid, and people will love it. So
yeah, we'll have to wait till March to see how that goes. What is this Valkyria Chronicle thing?
It's the game that I can talk about because Durin is not here again.
Wait, does Durin not allow you to talk about this game?
He hates Valkyria Chronicles. I fucking love Valkyria Chronicles.
Why is it so awesome? Just quickly.
Think of a mix between, like, okay, this is really hard. It's a unique game because nothing else plays like it, but it's a mix between, say, a Battlefield and a Final Fantasy Tactics, where every character, and a Fire Emblem, like Fire Emblem, Battlefield, Final Fantasy Tactics. If you chuck those three things together, you get Valkyria Chronicles. It's a semi RTS, semi third person action game, which is turn based, so it doesn't even make sense. And it's also got a lot of RPG elements, like leveling up and gearing up. And it's also got a fantastic storyline with characters you actually care about. And it's very coherent and actually has some emotional punch to it. I think Stream Boy pointed out a review. What was this one word? What was that word?
Oh, Battlefields.
Battlefields. That is zero Valkyria Chronicles. It is fantastic. It is fantastic. It is one of my favorite.
That was from a random Steam review.
Yeah. Done. That's it. That's my pitch. If you have $20 to spend and like Japanese stuff, Valkyria Chronicles, buy it.
Okay. There you go. And then I think the last big one we have is the new video game awards, since the VGXs are no longer a thing, thanks to Spike TV. Is being presented by Jeff Keighley. Published by or sponsored by Jeff Keighley.
So he's fronting a lot of the money for it.
So it's not remotely connected to Spike TV, which is what surprised me.
But it's also it's a live audience, which the last year's one was but on the internet, and it was in like a studio or something.
I think there's a lot of good about last year's format, but also a lot of bad.
They had a lot more personal touch to it.
Yeah, I really liked that element of it. They underplayed the actual awards and the developers who received those awards, and that's the problem with it. It has to be an award show, at least almost first and foremost. I know it's mostly about the reveals, but it pays to actually care about the rewards you're giving out and the people who are getting them, because that's kind of what the game industry is lacking in terms of like a really good awards show, the ones at GDC. And the ones at GDC have their own problems because not everyone's a part of that. Like it's we're lacking a big independent award show. And I like the fact that he cares enough to try and start one up himself. I just don't know if he has a good track record, man. Like, I don't know. The last couple of Jeff Keighley shows haven't been that great, so I don't know.
And I guess anybody interested or on the fence for going to Sony convention, the day before the Sony convention in Las Vegas.
Yeah. And the Sony convention actually looks like it's going to be a fucking thing. It's going to be a goddamn thing. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff, a lot of devs there.
Yeah. A lot of devs. Atlas is there. So, I'm fucking excited. I looked at that dev list. I was just looking for that one fucking image, and I saw Atlas.
CD Projekt, I think, is going to be there in some
capacity. Oh, shit. It'll be Witcher
stuff. I think they might just have a Witcher thing.
It's not going to be Cyberpunk. Remembering. Everyone wants to see Cyberpunk. It's not going to be Cyberpunk. It's not going to be there.
God, Cyberpunk. Don't get me started.
No. I know. So that it's going to be interesting. Is that in LA as well? Like, is this back to back in LA or?
It's in Vegas.
Okay.
They're back to back, yes.
Back to back in Vegas. I hope the Giant Bomb crew go, because that could be a thing. I bet they won't, though. But it'd be cool.
Jeff's on the judges panel again.
Yes, he is. I love that segment of the Bombcast where they slowly broke down what this was.
There was only someone we knew that was perhaps on the judges panel.
He was also on the judges panel for the VGX last year. Hopefully it's good. But it's also kind of sad because I don't think there's many games this year Like, it's not fight this year.
This was a rough year for video games just because of new consoles and a lot of... I think, Jeff said pre-E3 is like, you know, this is 2014. It was going to make you really excited for the games of 2015.
Exactly. And, like, the only game I'm really looking forward to this year is, like, fucking Persona Q, and that's, like, me and three other dudes.
What about you, Superboy? Is there anything you're super excited for?
Nothing that I'm positive is coming out this year. And, where the hell is Galaxy?
Yeah, like, that's one on my radar.
Where the hell is Hyper Light Drifter?
We've been seeing gameplay demo. Like, I think it's just they're sitting on, like, you know, maybe, like, doing a more content for that, and...
I mean, I have played Hyper Light Drifter, and I don't know when it's coming out.
That game looks really different to what its name suggested it looks like.
I think the game was really fun.
They just want to make sure it is, like, super polished when they release it, I feel like.
I really hope that name doesn't hurt them in the end.
Why? Why would
it's,
it?
It's fine to me, yeah.
Oh, I know. I just think it's an indie game with a weird name that isn't necessarily memorable, but it looks fantastic. Like, I think if they... I'm just worried about the marketing for that game. That's all. That's it.
Okay.
I guess word of mouth will sell it, but hopefully. Yeah.
The game The Last of Us doesn't make sense. You're not just two people at the end of the thing. It makes no sense.
Spelunky is a dumb name.
Spelunky is a dumb name.
Team Fortress 2? What does that mean?
But it's a memorable name. Spelunky has like some snap to it. I like it.
New Brahma. Are there any games?
He's not here. He's not here.
Dang it!
EDC'd a while ago. Sadly.
I'm New Brahma. There is obscure European strategy game that I very excite.
Yes.
Yeah. And he's going to play Dragon Age Origins for the rest of the year. Dragon Age Origins.
Yep.
Yeah. Dragon Age Origins. Yep.
Dragon Age Origins.
All right. There we go.
I can't wait to next Dragon Age. It's going to be good.
Yeah. It's. I mean, like, granted, this is November. But this is also when the time when video games, like the big ones, are coming out, and there's like nothing that I've been super excited about.
The only thing that can make me jump out of my seat crazy excited is a Mass Effect trailer, and that's not going to happen.
I don't know. It could show up at the VGA.
Yeah,
it
could show up at the
Jeff Keighley Awards.
The new video game awards. What is fucking school?
They can't call the VGAs because that was before the VGXs. They can't call them the VGXs.
Well, it was the VGA Awards. The Video Game Awards.
Yeah, near the end there.
Yes.
But yeah, no, if there's a Mass Effect trailer, I'm there. Like, there's nothing can stop me from just going crazy. Assuming it's good. Assuming it's a good Mass Effect trailer. But there's nothing else I'm really... I think it's going to be stuff we've already seen. Like, get revealed. Yeah.
And I guess the last news topic, we talked about it during the break, but... I think the bigger thing is just a lot of people made an issue out of it, and I think all of us here don't see it as an issue. It was just like, you know, Ubisoft taking a lot of the big games off Steam, and then after outcry, put them back on.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, we've been talking about games that are not on Steam. Like,
Origin games.
Yeah, Origin games.
Origin games.
3DS games.
Yeah.
Yeah, those aren't on Steam. There's going to be a game with Steam in its name on the 3DS, though.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I have breaking news from New Brahma. Computer crash and is currently running disk check.
Nice.
That's great.
Good on him.
Okay. But yeah, it's... Do you guys... it's not a good idea to, you know, purchase from one... Like, you know, it's... As much as we put faith in Steam and Gabe Newell, it's not a good idea to put all of the, like, just hand him the keys to the castle, so to speak. I mean, so it's nice that...
I think it's a good idea until they prove to us that it's not, and they have yet to do that.
Yeah.
I don't. I think it's always... I think it's always a trappy thing if you give all the power to one company.
It requires, like, you know, the trust in, like, that they will do the right thing, whereas if you leave it up to, like, really healthy competition between, like, you know, if it's Origin has gotten better, and so, like, you know, that's
Origin as a client is fine.
Yeah. Uplay, not quite as much.
Not
yet.
Fine.
But then also, like, a lot more attention for me, at least, from places like, you know, GOG, or really just, like, you know, you don't need a library to, like, use to run games. Like, you know, pre-Steam, you remember when you just had stuff on, like, you know, in a folder?
And the thing is, Steam makes it so easy to keep everything organized. Like, other forms of media, I've had that for years. Like, if you go in, like, music or whatever, there are tons of different programs to take, okay, here's all your music in set folders and organizes it for you.
Mm.
That doesn't really exist with games. You can't just take any program and point it at this folder and it pulls all the EXEs. Because there's no, like, there's no metadata for games, if you get the point I'm trying to make. The only reason that media consumption on a PC works in any form is because there are programs out there that do the legwork of organizing it for you. That doesn't work with games. So yeah, you need something like Steam. It's not – the people don't like Steam because of anything like specific to Steam. It's just the best at keeping games organized in one place.
But it's – I don't know. Like,
sure, yes, the sales and stuff help.
Yeah, but I think the sales that actually people
but it's like, not like people are opposed to buying things elsewhere because, oh, they're too expensive or anything like that. It's because they won't be as easily organized then. That's the real reason.
I mean, like, you can run non-Steam games with a Steam overlay. But that's a pain in the ass.
You have to go add everything manually to the library. That's the problem. It's too much work. At least it's more than it should be. As opposed to either like an XBMC for movies and TV or something like a FUBAR for music, you just point it at a folder and it goes.
I only agree with you if you're including the ability to like uninstall and then re-download games in that description.
Yeah, like that level of versatility, but just like adding something to the list.
They were talking about it on the Bombcast, like a thing for Windows where pulls all these different things in and say, okay, here's your game list.
Yeah.
You know, next to the game, it lists the service that it's from, and then you can just re-download it and install it from there. That needs to exist. Awesome.
Yeah, but it doesn't exist yet. And so
it doesn't exist yet, but Steam is the closest thing to it.
I think, actually, I'll have to look into this, but I know when I had to update the NVIDIA GeForce Experience, there was a list of, like, pulled a list of all the games on my computer.
Just that are installed, though. It doesn't have the ones that you own that are not installed that you could then download. That's the problem.
Mm.
That's anybody wants to go to the effort of doing something, like making something like that.
I would totally love an XBMC for games. Like, the way I have my XBMC set up is like, okay, I click on a movie or something and it brings up a whole bunch of metadata like actor, director, and all of that. I wish I could do that for a game where, say, I don't follow games super closely and I play a game that I really like. I wish I could click on it and be like, oh, what else do I own that was made by the same studio? And then it shows it. Or, you know, I really like this voice actor that played this character. What other games do I have that he's, you know, plays a character? Stuff like that.
And Steve doesn't even do that. I'm here on the Torchlight 2 page and doesn't have any links to who the fucking studio is at all.
That's what I mean. Like, I wish there was something like that. It is a massive undertaking, and would be crazy. But I think if PC specifically wants to go forward, you're going to need something, maybe not that intense, but something along those same general lines at some point.
By the way, the developer and publisher for Torchlight 2 is Runic Games on the Steam store. You just go under where it says single player, multiplayer, and all that, Metacritic score, which that's something
but
else
the thing
I want to get
is,
into
But the thing is, it needs to be on the store page. You can't just see it in your library.
Yeah.
So, like, search for it in your library, and then on the side, somehow find the tiny store page link.
Yeah, exactly. Click on that. What I meant. Like, there's no metadata for games. This is the overall thing here. Yeah.
So, okay, what if Steam follows through with their like plan of making it like, you know, we've already seen the first step of it of making a customizable store page, but like a customizable library page?
I don't think they would do that.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't do that. All right. It seems like a transition to...
They wouldn't, but...
I don't know if they could.
That is not really news as much as wishful thinking or whatever, but something else I want to talk about, I didn't think about it until just now. Double Fine said that, like, based off sales of one of their games, it was Costume Quest, I think, they don't really give a crap about Metacritic. Like, it is not, like, they've not seen a noticeable increase or decrease of sales based off scores or anything like that over, all of their games.
That's because, Double Fine is still zero.
That's true. All right, yeah.
Double Fine is in an interesting position where they have a lot of perhaps undeserved community love.
And the
people buy word Double Fine games because they're Double Fine games.
Exactly. The word of mouth sells those games.
Like most of those games admittedly are pretty good. Like, I like a lot of Double Fine games.
I don't.
But I don't think each new Double Fine game brings in a new audience. At least not a ton of new audience.
Yeah.
I think it's the same people that are buying Double Fine games.
Yeah. Metacritic is only successful in changing people's opinions about a game if the marketing is also like behind how good a game is scoring, and B, a game is surprisingly good. Like, for example, Shadow of Mordor wouldn't be anywhere near as successful if everyone wasn't saying it was good. Like, all the reviews weren't positive. I don't think anyone would have given that game as much of a shot as it did if the reviews weren't positive. And I'm kind of looping in two things here. I'm looping in general positive consensus from reviews and Metacritic, but I think those two things do coexist. I think Metacritic is a resource for a lot of people. Like, it's a resource of
finding. If you look at Metacritic in a bubble, it's a perfectly fine review aggregator.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, with that, like, so it really helped Shadow of Mordor. It really helped The Last of Us. It really helped like a couple of like, especially new IPs when they come out. If they score well and it's reflected in review aggregates like Metacritic, it definitely helps, and I think it's a very positive thing. It's only when companies start adding like other shit to what Metacritic stands for that doesn't actually stand for, then things go bad, like bonuses to Metacritic. That kind of stuff doesn't make sense. But like, I wouldn't be like saddened if Steam started using like a Metacritic thing on its fucking Steam, even though they won't, because they have their weird own like community.
Yeah, the curator thing now for thumbs up or thumbs down. And along those same lines, like I know a lot of review sites or reviewers on certain sites are, you know, hesitant against, like, they, some of them want to get it shy away from the idea of giving a score and just, you know, give a drawn out text about.
They're the crazy people. They're the crazy people.
So you want a score. You don't care. You want a number.
The people who want to write long, drawn-out criticisms about video games are the people who have an audience that want that and are positively supporting their opinion to do so. In general, right, I'm far more in line with Jeff Gerstmann's opinion of it, where reviews should be a purchasing decision helper. I think games are so subjective at this point that we still haven't gotten any particular like defined language as to whether a game is good or not. Like, aside from technical performance, there's nothing else there that you can say, hey, this is a reason why you should like this game. Like, even writing, like, I love the writing of The Last of Us, doesn't mean you will. Like, it's one of those things where it's so subjective that only in those like small bubbles of the community that people really like, I'm not going to say wank to, but like really appreciate like critical analysis of a game, do those people make any sense in that the score on a review is intrinsically important to the larger community, which actually cares about, hey, whether I should buy this game or not. Should I buy this game? Is it good? Do you think so? I want a quick look at whether you think this game is good. Like, a 97% or 94% of Metacritic is a fantastic game. Almost guaranteed. Like, I can't see any game in that fucking list that's above 90% average Metacritic that isn't fucking fantastic. Like, there's reasons why people use scores, and I think that community is way bigger than the community that just wants to read a whole review. And the numbers reflect that, as Jeff keeps saying. Like, their reviews don't get as much like looked at as the quick looks for those games. Videos are better. Enticing factor than a long written out review. Maybe like the only weird like gray area here is like a video review, and I have no idea how those track. I know Angry Joe does really well with his video reviews, but I don't know who else does. So
Angry Joe is a weird thing because he's a very eccentric character to be with.
Like, he is that earlier description of someone who is making something for a specific audience.
If you took Angry Joe stuff and sort of just made a text, it wouldn't work as well, because his stuff is successful because of him as much as it is his opinion.
Yeah, but that said, he does make really in-depth long
he does not just sort of throw his personality in there and not care about the actual information. He does a good job. They're very thorough for the most part.
And so I'm wondering if there's room for more people like that in this like weird future we're heading towards where reviews don't matter. But at the moment, score. That's where.
Well, it's that reviews may still matter, but they just won't be in the same form in which they currently are. I find it interesting that you seem to be one of the people who go to Metacritic and check the scores, Yeah. But you also seem to be the other side of the person who, like, you look for that niche audience of, like, good writing stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think they're mutually exclusive.
I think it's important to be both. I think it's important to have a spectrum of inputs in your decision-making process. Because if you just rely on one, then I would watch movies that I fucking hate. Like, there's many movies out there that have amazing, like, critical reviews that I can't stand. Like, I'm not going to name them because they're failing to come to mind, because I usually just forget about them as soon as I don't like a movie. But like, if you just go by scores and you don't care about who's writing the review, then you have the other side of the problem where maybe that person likes games you don't. Like, for example, I love Valkyria Chronicles. If Shinboy only read reviews by me, he'd buy Valkyria Chronicles and fucking hate it, right? It's that kind of gray area. And I think the modern audience is more like how I approach things, not to say I'm anything special, in that they do look at things from a couple different sources. They do look at YouTube.
I agree with you, because I'm the same way. Yeah. I if there's a Giant Bomb review, I'll read the Giant Bomb review, taking into account who's writing it.
Yeah.
And then I will go on Metacritic and at the very least look at the score and read through a lot of the little like excerpts from reviews that they have.
Yeah.
I usually read a few of the positive and a few of the negative to see what people mm-hmm. who liked and didn't like had to say about why they liked or didn't like something.
Exactly. And those are usually from the conclusion paragraphs of those reviews. So it's like, that's exactly the information you want, right? So it's in seeing that plus the score, and then you'd probably watch a video too, right? Like I'm
yeah. Like, just, I want to see what this looks like in motion.
Yeah. And that's, I think that is the modern smart video game purchaser, is a person who looks at inputs from a lot of different angles. And I think the people who want to write reviews of that scores and have an audience just read their review and get everything that they have to say about a game from that is a bit, again, I don't want to say up their own ass, but they're a bit up their own ass. Like people want to get inputs from multiple sources. Well, a smart person does get inputs from multiple sources. They don't need one.
Yeah. If there are all these resources out there, and if you're not using them to inform yourself about a decision you're making, you're a dumbass.
Yeah. Yeah, like you should look at multiple people and what they think before you do anything. And that's not even just for video games. Like if you want to buy a new TV, look at Amazon scores, because there's people who actually bought it. You look at the tech sites because they actually know what they're talking about. You do a bunch of things to inform your decision about what you're going to buy with your money. I don't know.
Yeah, like a really interesting thing is to just like have a friend who is like has different political opinions than you.
Hmm. Yeah, and you can see how like two people can look at the same thing and see very different things from it. Yeah.
All right. Well, cool. I think that's any of the news topics you guys want to bring up, or
I don't think so. I think that was actually a fairly good discussion.
I'm happy with that. I had to play Devil's Advocate for a little bit, but that was fun.
Yeah. But wait. Before we go forward, Thurbleton, what is your opinion on reviews without scores and that kind of stuff? Reviews in general nowadays.
I don't judge this. I don't look for a score per se, but I do look for multiple opinions. I do look to try and know what the history of the reviewer is in relation to his opinion on it. Like the idea of like a review that is without opinion doesn't really interest me.
Mm. Isn't fun.
Yeah, that is just like reads like a technical spreadsheet. Like, not that the technical side of it isn't important to know, because I want to know, like, is this game going to have creepy graphical errors like Assassin's Creed does?
Like, Digital Foundry is a huge resource for that.
And yeah.
They do that. They're the ones who do it, and so you know to go there for that info. But that's not all you want.
Like, I agree that definitely it's good to make an informed decision, which is kind of why I was against the idea of Metacritic, because I thought, like, a lot of people just go there to check a score. It seems I do a lot of the stuff that you guys do as well. It's just you guys just go to Metacritic and it's already presented to you.
Yeah.
Whereas I check multiple websites and, you know, reviewers and all that.
Yeah. I usually like don't even another like, good,
another good option is like NeoGAF if he has review threads for big games.
Mm, yeah. But I don't know that those review threads usually have a couple of sites that I don't particularly like.
Well, I'm just saying, but there's a ton of sites there with all kinds of things.
Yeah, it's all in one spot.
Yeah, and just link straight to the review. It's basically the same thing.
Exactly, and I think, and you should also like you should develop that, like, that feeling for which sites you trust. Like, for example, I trust Eurogamer because they're always solid. I trust EGM to some extent, depending on who's writing the reviews. Game Informer, definitely to some extent. GameSpot, less so nowadays because I think they're kind of all over the place with their reviewers.
Who's doing the review.
Yeah, like Kevin Van Ord, I tend to trust. Some of the older reviewers. I don't know if I really trust many of the newer reviewers of that site or the guys I haven't heard of. Polygon, I never trust anymore. Even though they sometimes agree with me, I just don't. I can't do it.
Don't trust Polygon. Sorry. I don't really like IGN reviews.
Yeah. 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 Sometimes IGN's on the ball, sometimes they're not. It's just, yeah, it's, you get that feel for it. And you only get that feel from exposing yourself. Like Doubleton said, like getting exposed to multiple sites.
PC Gamer? Sorry.
Yeah, sure. If you,
PC Gamer's all right.
Yeah. Sure. I don't play many PC Gamer. Yeah.
Sweet.
And Destructoid and that kind of stuff. Like, this is a bunch of sites, but
Kotaku, even Rock Paper Shotgun, I think, does stuff. See, the thing about Kotaku that RPS I only just learned
can be a bit iffy at times.
But. Yeah, like, it's Kotaku has like an interesting approach of like they will have like,
that's the yes no wait one. Is that them?
I don't know about I don't know about that. I just know that like they have like paid like editorial and all that, and then they also have like, just, they will highlight user group made stuff,
right?
But it's harder to keep, like, to get a good like track record on the user created stuff, and their approach is just like a constant flow of information.
I don't Kotaku, but I can, but my I do have an issue though with their system, which is yes no made, like, wait, like, I think that's like in a weird like gray area between an informative one glance look and a non-informative one glance look, like, because, like, why is it a no, why is it a yes, like, is a yes marginal, like, is a 4-star a yes, is a 3-star a yes, like, which is a yes, like, that, yeah. Anyway, I don't know, I'm there's a reason I like Giant Bomb. I like the way they do things
because it's a website about video games.
Video games
moving on people. To plugs, New Brahma will plug the Giant Bomb PC Gaming Hub for like all weird conversation things and playing weird games. Cynic, what was your plug?
I am going to plug the Giant Bomb premium membership, actually, because I think the Metal Gear Scanlan that's going on right now is fucking awesome. It's
also,
like, my favorite thing going.
Mario Party Party 2.
Oh, yeah. That was amazing. That was amazing.
But also,
I'm so mad.
There's a deal for it right now. I believe if you want,
there is.
It's $50 for yearly membership, but you also get a $15 coupon for a t-shirt in the store. But right now, they're running a deal where it's only $35, and there's just no coupon.
Yep.
So anybody on the fence, check it out. It's definitely a neat thing.
Yeah, it's on sale right now. It's going to be on sale for a bit, I think. The advertisement on the podcast. Definitely Giant Bomb premium membership. Totally worth it if you like videos about video games.
Yep. And sometimes not about video games.
Yeah, like freaking, what's it? Well, I was going to call Mario
podcast about Formula One racing.
Yeah, I've started listening to the Alt F1 podcast.
As have I, and I've started watching F1.
I listen to the Power Bumpcast and don't watch wrestling.
I'm sure that's fine.
It's just really good. Amusing.
It's good. Nice. And Shinboy, I believe you have some plugs and possibly some music plugs.
Oh, God, there's so much music. What do you guys want to hear about? There's been a lot of good albums that have come out just even within the last month.
I generally only remotely like what you like, so go ahead with anything.
What if I told you there was a sequel to a concept album about an alien that comes to Earth looking for the universe's perfect cup of coffee?
It sounds like something that Shinboy would like.
And also, there's a character played by Chris Jericho.
Of course there is.
Devin Townsend released a double album, Z2. The first one is Dark Matter. Actually, I don't remember which one's actually first. Not that it really matters. One of them is a sequel to Ziltoid the Omniscient, which is called Dark Matters, which is really, really good. And then there's another album called Sky Blue, which is just sort of weird standalone stuff that has two really, really, really strong songs at the start and then sort of tapers off. Let's see what came out. New Soen album, which is like a weird proggy mix. If you sort of took Opeth and Tool and smashed them together. That's pretty good. Tabula Rasa, which was like the first single. There's a music video out for it. That's a really good song. So it's a Pluton, whatever. And then the big one, Nail with Ascaris. They hail from the land of self-confessed cynic in Australia. Released their second album, Citadel.
Nice.
And it is still constantly blowing my mind. It is probably, out of the three things that I'm talking about, the one that you two will enjoy the least. Because it is, like, by far the heaviest.
Right. I understand.
But everyone involved is a stupidly good musician. The guitar work is incredible. The drums are some of the best I've heard in a long time. The dude who does the clean vocals also plays a really, really good violin.
Hmm.
It's insane. There's a 16 and a half minute song, because I don't know.
I can't stand long. Anyway, I'm happy that you enjoy it.
It's really good. There's also that 3.5 minute thing that's basically just violin and acoustic guitar that I linked before.
Oh, there's one more plug I forgot about that I was also going to plug.
Yeah, music. I started my thing. Hold on. I got to finish my music.
I didn't mean to joke because you even had like 30 seconds of music.
Okay, hold on. I'm just saying I started my end of the year Google Doc, and I might see if Squiddle wants to do a top 10 albums of the year, like sort of side episode, because that'll take a while to get through.
Would it? Damn. Okay.
It would.
Nice. Yeah, we should. We have to start thinking about that, don't we? Our end of the year stuff. I'm in India for a lot of the end of the year, so let's see if I can time around that or if I can be on from there to find out.
Plans and schemes have begun for end of the year shenanigans.
My second plug, my 1-2 puncher is, if you missed the extra live stream and wondering where the fuck it is on the Giant Bomb website, it's actually all archived now and has its own little sub page. If you go to giantbomb.com/videos/extra-life/, you get to the
whole link.
Yeah,
there's a whole link. Show notes.
Yeah, there's the whole, all the extra life, not even from this year, but from the years before that. And you can, so you can watch all of like Drew and Alexis playing all of the Halos, like literally all the Halos now. And now at this point, all of the Halos. And you can also watch like Brad play all the stuff, like everything they did for Extra Life, like fucking 96 hours of fucking video is right there from this year alone. Yeah, it's just. It's right there on the website, and that's free. That's free to anyone. So there you go.
Sweet. I've been trying to run this thing the whole time. I didn't actually think about a plug for any of the things I've been talking about. Yeah, I got nothing. Try and bump back.
I did too. I did too. Website, that's nothing, brother.
Video game.
Yeah.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Listen to Citadel.
It's so good, you guys.
Don't listen to this, I'll just make him mad. Just make him mad by not listening to it.